Hi there, everyone. Welcome to the Game Week 13 Net That Hall Matchup Show. I'm joined by Gabe, my fellow co-host. It's just the two of us steering the ship today, isn't it?
Yes, it is. May God be with us all, my friend.
I hope so. I know that whenever Marin is not around, we always have a few technical glitches, but happy paternity to him. Obviously, the news has come out that he's had a baby girl and it's his birthday today. So if you're a hauler and you want to send some messages of love to Mariner, make sure to tweet him on at FPL Mariner.
Mariner's just hauling with the birthing this week. two births in 1 week. That's great. Uh-oh. Either Nima froze or I froze. Here we go. Here's the first mess up here in the show. Nima may have to pull...
Am I back?
You're back. Did you freeze or did I freeze?
No, I thought you froze, but then I'm pretty sure it's my internet, which I've been promised for the second month running will be installed this Friday, but we'll see how that goes. Before we lose any more podcast listeners, I'll quickly just do the intro and we'll go right into it. So obviously, it's kind of, you know, one third of the way through the season. Silly season's about to begin with 10 game weeks in 40 days or so. So it's the exciting part of the year for everyone, I think, is where we make or break our ranks. So excited to talk to everyone about it. Before we go into it, I just want to pull up the obviously the mini league. So the mini league is FG1XMB for anyone listening on podcast. We have some pretty incredible ranked managers in there now, including people in the top 100. So come and compete with us and have your chance to win either a football shirt, a book about FPL, or a free premium membership to an FPL tool website. But we won't go any more into that. I have an exciting bit from you. It's the FPL philosophy of the week, but in video format, I believe. So do you want a little bit of a different take
this week. Comes to courtesy of a friend of ours, FPL teacher. He's at FPL_Senate on Twitter. And it reminded me, like, I remember coming across this quote when I was a teenager. And I don't think there's much to say about it. Let's just hear it.
Nice. Yeah, let me add that in.
Because they become your actions.
Start.
Watch your actions because they become your habits. Watch your habits because they become your character.
You got to restart. It didn't start at the beginning.
Oh, is it only just... Oh, I see. Let me play that.
Okay. Here's my favorite Lao Tzu quote. Wow. Watch your thoughts because they become your actions. Watch your actions because they become your habits. Watch your habits because they become your character. Watch your character because it becomes your destiny. Simply, watch your thoughts. Now, later today, tomorrow, watch your thoughts. Just do that.
I enjoyed that. First time we've seen a video, I think, for the philosophy segment.
Yeah, yeah. I just, you know, FPL is a game that really does highlight our own individual characters. And I've seen, you know, there were some people getting discouraged with FPL and all of that. And those thoughts of discouragement will become your reality. I learned this the hard way last season when I was ranked 2.9 million at this stage. And then, you know, I changed my thoughts by just coming up in my mind. I came up with the FPL beach. And I was on the FPL beach for the rest of the season and I did well. So your thoughts are everything. So just watch your thoughts.
I really like that. Is that Lao Tzu?
Yeah.
Nice. So let's just give a shout out to some of the haulers who've been patiently waiting backstage since we went live. And then we'll go into the transfers and obviously the matchups and NetXG for the week. So evening to Richie Milburn, first one here today. Ramanathan, nice to see you, mate. Blue the new big eye, good evening. Fantasy Pavilion, thanks for offering to co-host while I have internet issues. BlueNix99, good to see you, mate. Same to you, Absurdologist. We got Ignatius Brian Laxana. Nice to see you, mate. We got a runner. You are actually, I'm just going to put this up quickly. It says, Gabe's my favorite YouTuber, knows a lot about philosophy, Zen, and meditation apart from FPL. So I just thought that's a really nice message.
It's nice.
Richie says I'm a bit blurry. I can only imagine he means me because I'm the one who has all the technical problems. But hopefully from Friday onwards, I won't have these issues anymore.
You know, that when an image is blurry, it could be a problem with the image itself. So it could be your connection or maybe he's been drinking. Maybe that's why you're blurry. Maybe the lens has been drinking.
Yeah, this is actually quite an early show for us, isn't it? 7 p.m. And normally when it's the different time zones, we go quite late, don't we? Like 11 p.m. on a Friday. So it's a welcome change for me to be going a bit earlier today, I think.
Different state
well, let's
of mind.
Go to the FPL. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I'm actually working from the office tomorrow, so I definitely do not want to be up too late. So going into the transfer trends, I'll keep this one short this week. I've cut out some of the slides because I'm fed up of talking about people doing goalkeeper transfers and it doesn't seem like the most kind of valuable use of your move. So for the podcast listeners, what we have at the moment is the 8 top transfers in and out on the screen. So we have, at the moment, as things stand, Trent has 250K transfers in. We also have Gallagher, James, Smith-Rowe, Cancelo, Jimenez, Dennis and Bernardo being brought in. Bernardo Silva, that is. On the transfers out, Antonio is the most sold so far this game week with 143,000, followed by his comrade Benrahma. Ronaldo, Diaz, Vardy, Gray, Tielemans and Shaw are also being sold in the masses. So I think we expect this really, don't we? You know, in terms of players out, West Ham have some tough fixtures coming with City, the most kind of pertinent one. So I can see why people are getting fed up and moving both those players on. But there are some questions about both of them, so we'll come to them later. I just want to then go through the forwards trends. So these are the top 10 forward transfer combinations in FPL courtesy of Fantasy Football Fix, where I use their tool for this. At the moment, as I said, it looks like kind of Antonio, Vardy and Tony are being mass sold. And Ronaldo, which is a bit harsh after his assist, one of the few strikers to not blank in recent weeks. In terms of assets being bought in, so we see Jimenez being bought in ahead of two plum fixtures, first one being Norwich. We see Dennis being brought in as well, probably as an enabler that can get good minutes, and Watford do have a fixture swing coming in a few weeks' time. We also have Kane being brought in, Benteke after his heroics, and Hwang is still being brought in for those who can't afford Jimenez. So is there anything, I guess, Gabe, that you see in the forward line that seems unusual to you, or does it just seem like the right kind of mindset is happening with the Hive?
I mean, I understand the Ronaldo transfers out, given the, I mean, he's got a couple of upcoming, maybe tricky fixtures, and United are kind of reeling right now, but it's still 0-0. They should be losing anyway. Antonio is an interesting one to me. If I were an owner, I don't know, I wonder if it's already too late for the Antonio exodus. Last game week, if I remember correctly, Antonio was one of the main ones transferred in.
Yeah, so he was in the top five for a while. He was.
Even up to last week, and now he's in the top for transferred out. So I don't know. I do understand why he hasn't been productive. He's been pulling out wide quite a bit and not returning. And he has some difficult fixtures coming up. So I understand it. But those sellers are going to want Antonio back really soon, I think. And then Vardy's a strange one, because if you kept through Chelsea, then you should be keeping Vardy now. So Vardy to Jimenez and Vardy to Kane is crazy. I don't know. I you know, if you kept through Chelsea, you should be keeping Vardy now, I think.
Yeah, I think I sold him last week for Kane. It didn't really amount to much, but it was with the mentality that I didn't want to kind of sell Vardy this week with Watford and what's coming next if I didn't get rid of him already. I think the blurry comments are actually about the entire stream. And I have a feeling that, you know, when I dropped off, I think it moved from one of my hotspots to the weaker one. So what I might do, if we've got a minute, is just switch to the faster hotspot, because I think it will
switch back. Everybody cross your fingers. So we're going to hope for the best.
I will be back.
That the ship doesn't sink. So as Nima freezes there, I think I can still say stuff. Let's see. Yeah, the whole not the whole screen is blank. It's interesting that the forward transfers are interesting because none of them are really producing. So is a forward transfer welcome back as Nima just kind of reconnects here? I wonder if forward transfers are worth it at all, because you're not really – I mean, the only thing you're doing is maybe – shifting money, shifting your investment from one place to another, but you're not really gaining much on the production in terms of moving your forwards around. So I get it if you want to downgrade or maybe take advantage of some upcoming fixtures. But again, it would be, you know, even moving to Jimenez now, he's got two great game weeks. He's got two great fixtures coming up. But then it's another transfer, kind of a hard transfer for Jimenez after that. Are you back with us, Neymar? Are you all set?
Yeah, it looks like I'm on the faster internet. So I just hope it doesn't drop back off again. No, so I agree with everything you said. I did catch that. I think for me personally, there's some questions about if we've kind of swerved Kane or Son already, as some have asked, is it worth now still going for them after the showing we had? I'll come to that later, but I do like the idea of the Ronaldo to Kane move. I don't mind that for 3-4 weeks, but I don't really like the Jimenez move. He is someone I've considered for Tony as a replacement, but
I would go for Jimenez over Kane at this point.
That's interesting. Well, he's like returned 3 goals, 3 assists in his last 6 starts, right?
And his fixtures are just as easy, if not easier, than Kane's.
Yeah, for these two at least, anyway. But
well, after these two, you're probably thinking of moving towards United anyway, right?
Yeah, so I guess it would be a placeholder for Ronaldo either way.
If that's where you decide, yeah, because I have Jimenez now. I have no, at this point, I have no plans in moving for Ronaldo. It'll be a move to Antonio.
I'm really interested by the Antonio sales. I think what I would say is this kind of reminds me of Salah last season, where lots of people held him. He blanked for like 12 weeks. It might have been Bruno, who cares? Both of them had periods like that. And then basically people were then like, well, they've now blanked for so long, I'm now going to sell them. And it was just as like, it was getting close to buying them back time. So I think it's a similar thing here, where if you sold Antonio 3-4 weeks ago and you've endured like 1 goal in 5 game weeks without him, you've done well. I don't know if I'd now be selling him just 3-4 weeks before you want to buy him back.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's my only thing. And I'm not looking to kind of use 2 transfers to get him in and out. And those fixtures from 18 are too good to kind
Transfers during the congested period are valuable. They're so valuable. That's one thing I wanted to say. You probably want to avoid hits more than usual during congested periods, because you don't know how rotation is going to hit. So those hits can be tricky unless you have to make one. But these are the weeks. This is where you set your team up so you can take account for any injuries or illnesses or anything like that.
Like, I wouldn't be using a free transfer nor a hit to sell Antonio to anyone. Just for me personally, it's like, you know, you could bench him if you really must against City. I don't condone that either. He scored against them both the last 2 times he played them, I believe. So, you know, I don't think it's as cut and dry. Like, I've got Antonio, I'm starting him. If I was looking to sell him, I'd probably just bench him and play one of the 4 or 5 defenders that everyone seems to be playing every week.
Right.
So going into the mids then, we'll quickly go through. So here it's Benrahma, Gray, Mbeumo and Havertz who are mainly being sold. And they're being replaced by the likes of kind of Smith-Rowe, Jota, and Gallagher is a big target for everyone, it looks like. I think he's risen to 6 million almost, or he's getting there anyway. But the kind of trends here, I guess they are quite obvious. So Havertz, a lot had him for that 3-game spell. We then heard that he was still going to be striker last game because Lukaku hadn't done team training yet. So people kept him again for that one too, I believe, against Leicester. And obviously that didn't quite work out. So I think if you did still have Havertz now, it's a good time to be moving on, even if United aren't the best of teams in their form right now. I think you could do a lot with that Havertz money. And Jota's been pictured in training today. So yeah, I would be targeting Jota personally, or a Foden. But it's interesting, Foden isn't being transferred in. And there's a lot of questions about whether people should sell him. So we'll come to those when we get there too. I don't know if there's anyone in here that screams out to you, but it all is quite obvious, doesn't it? It's kind of like Smith Rowe and Gallagher, the like cheaper fourth mid, maybe fifth mid. Yeah. And then you've got a bit more pricey in Jota for those who have the money to go there.
Yeah, no surprises here, right?
Nothing too crazy. I was on a guest stream with Penguin last Friday, and there was, I think it was him. It was probably him. They had Neco Williams in their team, and it was like the first time I'd seen him in anyone's team. So it is nice every once in a while to see in transfer trends like a random player that is being bought in by the masses that no one has, but not in the midfield at the moment. I think the midfield and defense, they have become very template. It is only really in those forward 2 spots maybe where there's a few differences between who people have. So yeah, I think just going into defenders, Duffy has started to be sold for Trent. So for those poor souls who kind of decided to go without Trent this whole time and that they thought 7.7 million or whatever is obscene for a defender. I think even they're now changing their minds. Diaz is also being mass sold for Cancelo, Trent and Reece James. And then right at the bottom, the 10th most popular defender transfer is actually Livramento to Reguilon. So I think for teams where maybe they're now aggressively looking to go for the 4 or 5 at the back and they maybe had Livramento at 4 mil, they want to sell for 4.3, bank to profit. Mm. He does have pretty bad fixtures coming up. I had a look on like Fantasy Football Fix and my rotation planner was basically like, you're going to bench Livramento for the next 5. So I can see that if you don't really want him now and you think he's done and Southampton are done, you could move off him and go for someone who's just like 0.5 million more and get into that Spurs defense if you really believe they're going to tighten up.
I have trouble understanding this people moving to Spurs defense, to be honest. I mean, I get their attacking potential, but there's no floor. Like the floor is so low because their defense looks so bad, right? I don't know. You know, Reguilon for 5. He's around 5, right? Or
he is, yeah.
Move up to a, I don't know, who's that? Who's that? 5.5. Laporte has been playing.
Yeah, he's a bit of. I'm a bit worried about those City defenders now, the centre backs. I guess we'll see what happens with Pep's team and who plays there. But
I mean, his competition is Nathan Ake, right?
I guess there's Stones as well, though, right? I guess
Stones plays on the right side, though.
Yeah, that is true. It's just, I think the double City defense, there's a lot to say for it. Like, if I could stretch there, as you say, I would rather have a second City defender than go for Reguilon.
I think I would rather than go for Reguilon, I would even rather go down. Just, I mean, maybe not, you know, if you want to move from Livramento. I don't know. I don't see... We don't have any evidence that Spurs' defense is tightening up.
And you wouldn't then go for the cheaper Spurs boys either, like Davies at 4.4 or Dyer at 4.5.
That's like getting Cody. You know,
one of the free centre backs. Yeah.
Like, hell no.
So we've just said they don't get clean sheets and we're willing to pay half a mil more for the attacking wing backs if we are going to go to Spurs.
I mean, I think it also depends. If you got Livramento at 4.0, you don't move him unless you have something, you know, really interesting to move him to. So for example, instead of Reguilon, go higher, get your 5th premium defender.
Like for me, Reece James would be quite exciting because I don't have him yet. So I've got Livramento and White.
Right.
And if I could just move Livramento to a Reece James who, when we look at the zonal stuff later, I guess it's quite clear that flank on Man United's side is going to get absolutely destroyed by Reece James. So that terrifies me. I think he's actually my highest threat to my rank as well every week now.
Legit captain shot this week, I think.
He is. I think Dread FPL, our friend, he's actually going to captain him. And he's had a lot of success with Cancelo and Reece James captaincies over the last few weeks, outscoring Salah as well, which it's a bit of a risk, but it worked out for him this time.
But I think that 5th defender spot is either very cheap or a 5th premium. I wouldn't go anywhere in between. I just don't see the value there in between.
There was talks of, I guess, Mitchell and Palace, wasn't there? But we saw how the new Gaeta owners were rewarded when they sold Sanchez last week. So I'm not convinced. If I was going to go to Palace, I think Gallagher is the guy. And maybe when Eze comes back, that could be interesting. And if you're really nuts and you want to go for Zaha and pay more, go for it. And, well, I know someone who got rewarded with Benteke's points. I, however, went for Edouard in one of my fan teams who got me 1 point, which was fantastic.
Somebody brought Benteke in. I don't know if it was Siva, maybe from a Banger podcast.
I think so, yeah. I don't know why. I was attracted to Edouard, the shiny new thing. And turns out that Benteke just every once in a while has these 12-point games and then disappears for a few weeks. But he's been doing it silently most of the season. His stats in the algo have been quite high, haven't they, each week?
Yes, his conversion hasn't been good, though. So the narrative is that he's underperforming his stats. And we're kind of eating some humble pie here and at the hall because we famously said that he's underperforming his stats because he's shit. So he goes and he just like returns just at will. So I'm not going to say anything else about Benteke for a little while.
Let's not curse that. I think Absurdologist just made a comment as well that actually he only Reguilon.
Yes. Nice.
Reguilon completed just 1 cross out of 6 and scored a lucky goal. loses possession easily, doesn't win duels. His heat map is that of a fullback, not a wingback. And the team is so bad at attack as well as defense with no creativity and Romero out. So I think that really illustrates the point you were making about it doesn't seem like something to be excited by. I do like Emerson Royal. So I think he gets the 90 every week where Reguilon gets benched or subbed early. So I think he would be the one I'd look at over Reguilon if I could. Let's go into NetXG. So before we kind of get you going, I just wanted to tell the viewers, obviously, this is like some new way of presenting the NetXG data. Essentially, you're going to talk through the matchups this week, but using NetXG as the filter, aren't you?
Yes. So this is like the matchups portion of the show. And this has been some development we've been doing with NetXG. And just to kind of explain it, so this is we now have two models. One is a predictive model and one is a descriptive model. In the predictive model, what we've done is we get the XG per shot, and then we kind of on one side, and then on the other side we have a formula of expected goals prevented divided by expected goals on target conceded to get kind of like a goalkeeper metric. And then we predict the shots using shots versus shots conceded. And this will, the next step in this algorithm, it'll have like a rolling average to account for recent form. So right now it's taking into account season long data. It will hopefully by next week, we will include the kind of like just the last four game weeks data. So like two home, two away fixtures, ideally, and kind of average that with the season long data to take into account current form. So that gives us the number in the metric. And then the percentages we get using of this function in Excel that I just came across that somebody just pointed my attention towards. So we get kind of a probability function of 0 goals, 1 goal, 2 goals, 3 goals, and 4 goals. And that way we can kind of qualify the net XG metric. So are you following me, Nima? Did I lose?
No. I think that's a really good way of explaining it, because I guess for anyone who is coming across this for the first time, or this is the first episode they've heard about NetXG, there's obviously the video on demand with the short kind of intro to NetXG where they can go and have a look at it and then come back here and see how it's evolved since. Because as you say, it's an experiment and you're going to keep kind of improving it as you go. But it is amazing to see how quickly it's evolving since that very first VOD as well. And if you are listening, please do go back and check for the playlist on YouTube that's about the kind of intros and tutorials for the different metrics on the channel.
And if you are listening on the podcast, I do recommend just come visit the YouTube channel. Give it a like while you're there if you do enjoy this, because this is quite visual. There are percentages and bars and stuff like that. I'll try to read it for everyone's benefit. But let's go with the first matchup. So it's Arsenal hosting Newcastle. Arsenal predicted net XG of 1.65 versus Newcastle predicted net XG of 0.43. If we look at Arsenal, net XG of 1.65 or predicted net XG of 1.65. And then we have percentages for 0 goals. The percentage chance that they score 0 goals is 27.15. 1 goal is 37.1, 2 goals is 23.54, 3 goals is 9.19, and 4 goals is 2.47. I'm not going to read them all out for every single matchup, but this is just the first one so people kind of get an idea. So we're looking at the net XG of 1.65. So we see the highest percentage of 37.1% is for 1 goal. But take a look. What's interesting here is that there's a higher percentage that Arsenal score 0 goals than there is they score 2 goals. So it's 27.15% 0 goals and 23.54% 2 goals. And you might ask yourself, well, how is this possible with a net XG of over 1.5, right? You would expect it to be 2. The idea behind this is like, it's when you're working with probabilities, is the 2 goals doesn't happen kind of until it happens kind of thing. So it's to gain the extra 0.35 needed to reach the 2-goal threshold, it's easier to predict that you won't even reach the first threshold. And we'll see later, we'll have some comparisons. This is just in the case for Arsenal versus Newcastle. So all of these are very matchup dependent. You'll see later on, there is one more team that we'll show you that has a very similar predicted net XG as Arsenal. I believe it's 1.66 for Chelsea. and we'll see how the percentages are completely different.
That is actually really interesting that it's different per team and on the matchup they're facing. There's a comment, Gabriel, in the live chat just about how has NetXG compared to actuals from FPL A+. I know that if they're not already following the NetXG Twitter account, I know that at the end of game weeks, you do try to kind of put something up that shows the actuals versus the predicted NetXG. Is that the best place for them to take a look at that, the NetXG Twitter account?
Yeah, that's where most of the all the results and stuff will be posted. Now when I would ask also to FPL A+, actuals, are you talking about the actuals, like the actual net at XG that resulted from the game? So the value that's churned out by the statistical descriptive model? Or are you talking about actual just regular XG? Or are you talking about actual scores? So if you could qualify that, then the idea is to compare it with the actual net XG, since what we're trying to do is predict net XG, and with the hopes that it's a good descriptive model, so therefore it will, you know, you can kind of study it and study the percentages to predict the goals.
And then you can tell over time how close you are to getting the actual net XG. So yeah. I guess you can tinker the model as you go, and the hope is that you'll get to a point where the pre-match predicted net XG is very in line with what the actual net XG will be at the end of the match. And therefore you can use it to basically make decisions in your FPL team, like benching decisions, clean sheet decisions, captaincy decisions.
Yeah, exactly. And like, if we're moving over to Newcastle here, right? Their predicted net XG is 0.43, but the highest probability is that they score one goal. 38% chance that they score one goal versus 31% chance that they score zero goals.
So I should take a -4 for White out and bring in Davies.
White out and bring in James. James. You have to bring in James Nima.
You've been telling me this for days.
Yeah. It's so long. You got to bring in James. It's the only
thing. I'm going to start White. He's going to blank. And then Reece James is going to cost me another 0.4 million.
100%. That's the way to read it. So we can go to the next slide if you want. If you want to make a prediction, match. This is your team. I don't know if you want to make predictions.
Yeah, so I guess I'm actually going to this match. And at the moment, I have White and Saka both starting in my 11. So I'm hoping that this will be like a farewell game for White. I am looking to moving on to James, but I think I will wait that one more week. I'm going to prioritize Jota, I think, this week. Mm-hmm. In terms of kind of what to expect from this game, I do think this is actually a really good game for Smith Rowe again. So I think if I had Smith Rowe and I had a benching headache, I'd be really in trouble. Luckily, I don't have a benching headache. We'll come on later about some stuff about Brentford Everton. So I know that Everton have, I think in the last six game weeks, they've conceded the most big chances. And there's some people kind of saying maybe we should be playing Tony or Mbeumo this week. And that might lead to some headaches for people picking between the likes of Smith Rowe and those players. But my prediction is I think we'll need a bounce back game. There's some tough matches to come after this with United and Everton away in quick succession. So I'm looking like they need to come back from this. They're going to have a whole week to prepare. There's no Europe for Arsenal. This is a must win game. So, you know, like I'm predicting like it could be like a very tight 1-0, but I would take those 3 points if we can do that. Obviously, West Ham is playing City and they're only 3 points ahead of us in fourth. So, you know, we have to take this opportunity and hope West Ham lose as well. But yeah, I'd be going for a 1-0. I've not seen enough attacking creativity from us to expect more. If we're going based on what Blue Nicks is saying, he's predicting 5-2 Arsenal. if we go on previous Arsenal-Newcastle games, they are thrilling encounters. I'd say the only other game I find as exciting in previous years was Arsenal-Liverpool. But Arsenal-Newcastle, I've seen a 7-4 in the Premier League, for instance, on like Boxing Day. So I think if there's a game where it could be just absolutely nuts, this could be it. And it could just blow up all the metrics and predictive models. And it could be like a 4-2 or something nuts like that.
Yeah, or another 4-4. Sorry to bring that one up.
There's been a 4-4 as well. Yeah, there's been a few.
Oh, man, the four goals in the second half. So we'll go through Palace and Villa really quickly here. I won't go through all the numbers. But basically, Palace predicted, I think Nima froze on us again. So I'm going to keep going. Palace predicted net XG against at home against Villa is 1.5, with the highest percentage of one goal of 37.45%. Villa at Palace predicted net XG of 1.27, with the highest percentage of one goal at 38.55%. Interestingly, Villa have a high percentage of zero goals as well at 34.61%. And given that this game is at Selhurst Park, I would actually, in terms of, well, how predictions go, I would side with the lower predictive number, but it's close enough, I think. So at 34.61, I don't think Villa score in this game against Palace, just because Palace is at home. Now, remember, none of these figures are taking home and away into account. So I think this, like a 1-0, 1-0 Palace over Villa. Nima, welcome back. I covered this one. We can move on to the next one unless you have any comments on this match in particular. I do want to get to a couple more matches. I want to get to the Liverpool match and the Chelsea match.
Yeah, we'll go through the interesting ones in more detail. I think with this one, like, people either have Gallagher or they have Gaeta, and maybe they're considering in a future week someone like Watkins. But I think in terms of FPL assets and actual relevance at the moment this week, it's interesting to look at the metrics for it, but probably not the most exciting match for FPL managers anyway.
Yeah. Here we go. This one's really interesting because Liverpool versus Southampton have a predicted net XG of 1.27. However, the highest percentage of goals for them to score is 2, which is really interesting. So what we're seeing here is lower predicted net XG, but because Liverpool are in such good form, their stats are so good, they create so much, there's more of a chance that they score 2 goals with a predicted net XG of 1.27 than there is that they score 1 goal. So net XG would predict them in this match to score 2. And that's really interesting with such a low net XG. And that's why, like, I think this slide kind of really begins to highlight how net XG, at least in this form, gives context to the numbers. As Nima froze. Oh no, you're good. You're good, man. You're starting to scare me. I'm gonna end up all scared. But yeah, net XG, like, especially with these percentages, it gives context to the numbers. So just because we're saying it has a Liverpool have a predicted net XG of 1.27 doesn't mean we're saying we only think they'll score 1 goal. On the flip side here, Southampton at Liverpool predicted net XG of 0.57, but their highest chance for a goal is 1 goal. So net XG predicts them to score 1 goal. It's 38.27% versus 30.69% for 0 goals. So net XG would see this game probably as a 2-1. However, the other thing, that one last thing point I'll make, and then I'll give it over to you, Nima, and get your thoughts here, is notice how low Liverpool's net predicted net XG is at 1.27. However, look how high the percentage is for 3 goals and even 4 goals.
It's the highest I've seen for most teams most of the season so far.
And you'll see this obviously with Liverpool and with Manchester City. It's 18.35% chance of 3 goals and 8% chance of 4 goals. But the net XG can still be low and have those higher probabilities of higher goals because it recognizes more. It recognizes, it just takes a more complete snapshot. What are your thoughts?
You know, these are really interesting numbers. It is fascinating that obviously, like, Arsenal's net XG was much higher, but their prediction to score anything more than 1 goal was much lower than it is for Liverpool. Yeah, which is something that's really rich data. I do like the more descriptive element of this as opposed to, say, just XG by itself. In terms of, I guess what I'll do is I'll predict what I think based on using the NetXG data as well. And then we can come back to this next week and see how many we got right. So I've said, I guess, 1 or 2 nil for Arsenal in the first game. The Palace Villa game, I'm looking at some dreadful 0-0 there. But moving on to this game, I'm not convinced that Liverpool will keep a clean sheet, especially looking at the kind of the numbers here for the 1 goal being 38% for Southampton. I think we're maybe looking at like a 3-1 Liverpool. 2-1, 3-1. That's what I would be going for here.
Yeah, I even judging by these numbers, I don't think that's out of the question. Let's put you at 3-1 just to make you a little different from the net XG prediction.
That's true. I need to be a bit more aggressive with my prediction.
I bring the human element.
That's true, yeah. And the human element is that Salah is currently playing out of his skin.
Exactly.
All he needs is a scrap.
The next match is a candidate for the last match on Match of the Day, as Mariner would say, so I won't go through it too heavily here. Norwich hosting Wolves, predicted net XG of 0.34, 43% chance of zero goals for Norwich. So the other thing to look at here is 43% chance of zero goals for Norwich means 43% chance of a clean sheet for Wolves. So I think it's the highest of the week of all the, according to NetXG at least. But 37.82% chance of one goal for Norwich, which I think is interesting. I think NetXG is taking into account certainly the past two game weeks where Norwich has scored four in the last two. Wolves predicted NetXG of 0.84 with the highest percentage of one goal at 34.13%. Second highest percentage, interestingly though, of two goals, higher than zero goals. Two goals is 27.19% compared to zero at 19.78%. Just moving through this one quickly, NetXG I think would say like a one or a 2-0 for Wolves. Norwich could get one here. There's a decent chance that they could get one here, but I think 1-0 is fair,
I guess, with the Norwich stuff as well, with the new manager and players that perhaps, I think they were on loan but weren't getting game time, like Gilmore. They've broken into the team. He got his assist last week. We might start to see a little bit more from Norwich than we have earlier this season. But I think if you had a Semedo still somewhere rotting on your bench, if you were fortunate enough to have him over Markel, who lost his spot, then I think this could be an ideal game to play Semedo. I don't think Norwich have had enough time yet to figure it out, but you are right, they are scoring and Pookie seems to have come back to life.
And you mentioned something, you know, that new manager, so the new manager bounce could, you might think, look, there's 5.5% chance between zero goals and one goal. Maybe the new manager bounce accounts for that difference and you may want to go with one goal for Norwich. That's a perfectly reasonable analysis of the graph, I think.
And I think Wolves will be very kind of happy with themselves with that cheeky 1-0 against West Ham, won't they?
Mm-hmm.
That was a very big game high for them. Yeah, they're going to be in good spirits, that's for sure. Yeah, so I'm predicting, I think you predicted 2-0, 1-0. I'm going to go out there and just say 1-1. I don't rate Wolves that highly at the moment, okay, personally.
Next match is Brighton hosting Leeds. Brighton with a predicted net XG of 1.43 with the highest goal percentage of one goal at 36.91%. Now, that's, we see a big difference there. The one goal for Brighton, net XG really likes the one goal for Brighton. There's, 8% and 10% difference between zero goals and two goals, respectively, from the one goal. So I think that's a strong one goal prediction for Brighton from NetXG. Leeds at Brighton, predicted net XG of 0.59. This one's a lot tighter, right? We have 0% zero goals. It's 35% zero goals and 38% for one goal. I don't know. Which would you side here?
It doesn't seem like the most exciting game.
No.
I'm actually in the situation where I thought I'd keep Rafinha for these next three, because after this one away game, he has two decent home games and then the tough run starts. I'm actually now kind of looking to move him on before this game. So I'm a little bit nervous, but I think the news was that Bamford's still a way away. And since the pinging incident, I've not seen him basically. Like, he was always meant to be 1 week away and a few months have gone past. So I don't know what's going on there. And their entire team is out. Is it Gerhardt? He's like 4.5 mil striker. And I don't know. I was going to get Davis as my downgrade for Tony to get the funds for Rafinha to Jota. But I'm now looking at Gerhardt because I reckon over the next month, for a 4.5 mil striker, he might actually get a couple goals.
Any 4-5 striker that plays is good. It doesn't matter how they play if they're starting. And he looks good. He's got some liveliness to him, right?
Yeah, like I've seen the different opinions from Leeds fans about how much they like him. But if he plays, he starts. And I think Rafinha, what I will say for me is, like, he's just incredible. And I am upset about the bench jam of many people who probably got the 14 Rudiger points off the bench last week because of the no-show from Raf. So that does upset me a little bit. That hurt me in the ranks. I've got Sanchez in goal for this, so I kept on to him for the suspension and started Foster last week. Thank you very much for that cheeky assist. But in this game, like, I am very much like, the reason I'm looking to sell Rafinha and I held on to Sanchez is I'm looking at like a 1-0 Brighton win, 2-0 Brighton win. I think Leeds have been dire recently. I think they're the only team in the entire Premier League yet to actually have a win. So with those injuries, without a single win to their name, I'm going to just move off Raf and hope that Jota over the next 3 or 4 outdoes him. And I would have then sold him in game week 16 when the fixtures turned bad anyway. So yeah. I'm taking a little risk there, I know, because he is kind of the talisman at Leeds now. And he is going to get an assist or a goal if they get any kind of return, generally speaking, mm-hmm. as long as he plays, that is.
Right.
So if I heard he was injured and he's definitely not playing this weekend, I'd feel a lot more relief and peace of mind than selling him. But
I think he was ill. Either way. I think he was ill, not COVID. That's what I read anyway. He's ill, not COVID, and he'll be fine for this.
So he'll probably play. And then I'm going to sell him and he's going to get a hat trick against Brighton, isn't he? I can already see it in the stars.
Well, moving on to the next one, we have Brentford hosting Everton. Brentford predicted net XG of 2.0, but their highest percentage of goals by far is one goal at 35.13%. Very interesting and kind of counterintuitive numbers here. Two goals for Brentford, is at 26%. On the Everton side at Brentford, the predicted net XG is 0.79 with a 37% chance of one goal, 26% chance of zero goals, and 23% chance of two goals. Nima, how are you seeing this game?
Yeah, this also worries me because at the moment, obviously, I'm playing someone like, say, Antonio White as well. I'm playing them both ahead of Tony, who I'm then looking to sell with Rafinha. So these two matches side by side really stress me out because... Like, Tony is going to be downgraded to a dud, and then obviously I'm going to get Jota. I still back that Southampton fixture for Jota more. Tony, I've got a few returns out of him. I've had him since game week one. I'm going to bench him this week regardless. I'm a big fan of Antonio. I would play him against City or anyone over Tony against Everton, even with Everton's problems. So I think by selling Tony, then I can't be upset about bench points if he scores because he will have funded Jota. So... I'm either going to kind of, I've now gone from benching Tony to, if I didn't do that move, I would actually now bench Ben White and play Tony and play a back three. So that's kind of where I'm at with game week 13 is I'm either going to play Tony and bench White probably at this stage or just sell Tony to fund Jota. I'm not sure where I'll go yet, but I'll update it on Twitter closer to the deadline. I honestly think this is like that Brentford need to get a win again soon, right? This is the game and Everton have some mad injury woes.
I have to say, I'm with Absurdologist here in the chat. He says, don't bench Tony, man. And so Everton have conceded the 7th most chances down the center. And I think what we learned from Brentford's last game against Newcastle is, you know, and when we predicted it last week, right, we said that the triangles that they play with, the possession triangle and the penetration triangle at the top right that Brentford play, that they was going to shift. And rather than having Mbeumo go high and Tony drop in, Tony was going to get higher up the pitch. And that happened against Newcastle. He was receiving the ball much higher up there. He had many more chances. You could say yes, and yes, the goalkeeper should have had the, you know, Tony's goal. But Tony also maybe should have scored another one or two, maybe had an assist. So
I feel like he has an offside goal every week. And he has penalties and he's nailed on striker for the team, right?
And Everton are reeling. I don't think it's time to bench Tony at all. And given these numbers, with that change in formation, I would lean towards the two goals for Brentford rather than the one, despite the difference in percentage there. Because of the change in formation, it's more attacking and Tony's closer to the goal. So I see
Am
more
I
goals
right
in them.
Thinking Richarlison is also now crocked?
Richarlison has five yellow cards, so he's suspended.
So he's suspended. So
five
that's
yellow cards in 12 matches, and he's missed several matches.
But didn't Richarlison, like, was it last season or season 4? I remember whenever I had him, he'll just get a red card for violent conduct every few months. he loves getting suspended. And Gray, just in the chat, so Ramanathan said he's probably out for at least 6 weeks. So Ignatius, I think the Gray injury, they have come back and said what type of injury it is. I think they've done further assessment, and I think it will take like 6 weeks probably at least before we see Gray again. So I've got Gray in both my Sky entries, and I was kind of hoping to keep him for when Arsenal and Everton play on a Monday night, because it's the only fixture that day, and you kind of ideally want a captain in Sky for every match day. I'm now going to have to sell him, so I'll probably be looking to move him on to Smith-Rowe.
There we go.
Yeah, so I think just on that note, before we move on from Everton Brentford, so 2-0, I think I go with you on that prediction. I don't see Everton scoring. There was something here someone said, what did they say? Okay, so they were talking about Leeds. So just before, in the last game, they said Ramanathan said that Leeds had a good game against Spurs with almost a C team. So I think for me, that just tells me a lot more about Spurs than about Leeds, regardless of the personnel on the pitch. I expect a Bielsa team and Bielsa system all the way through to like the 12-year-olds in that squad to know exactly what he wants from them, to be drilled for the rest of their life to play his way. So yeah. I feel like you can bring in any player and they will just play their way. So I don't think that was kind of Leeds being great. I think Spurs hadn't had a shot on target or something for like 2.5 games of Premier League football before that. So it was only really in the second half when Spurs even turned up. And once they kind of did, like, I don't think Leeds really looked like they were at the races.
Second half, Leeds fell apart. But I do agree, Leeds looked better than they should have looked, I think.
They did look a lot better than they should have.
In the first half, for sure.
But I think that's just to do with like Spurs, like, being could, the way could they've be. Been.
Yeah,
because we remember United as well, right? Just before Ole was getting sacked, like that was the game that saved him, and we saw how it went for him after that game. Like no one else turned over like they did.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think let's go on to the next match. It is Burnley Spurs, speaking of the Devils.
There we go. Burnley Spurs. So at Turf Moor, Burnley predicted a net XG of 1.41. 36.91% of one goal, 26% zero goals, 24% two goals. Tottenham on the other side at Burnley predicted net XG of 0.72. So maybe, yeah, almost half that of Burnley, which I found really interesting. However, the percent chance of one goal is almost exactly the same. It is 36.25% chance of one goal for Tottenham, 36.91% chance of one goal for Burnley. Spurs, 24% chance of zero goals and 25% chance of two goals. Look how similar these stats are. These are like the same team.
Yeah, I think that's what I was getting
this
at.
Matchup.
Like Spurs, yeah, but like Spurs.
1-1.
You could see a 1-1 here with a crisp 1-1. Goal, couldn't you?
And I'll get to that. I'll get to the how the 1-1 could come about later when we get to another section of the show. But yeah, 1-1 for net XG, and it's a quite strong 1-1 too. It's a confident 1-1.
Yeah, no, I think I've obviously got Kane. Some people have Son. I luckily only bought him in last week. I know there's been people who've owned Kane or Son for like 3 to 4 weeks now. And there's actually some questions from the Twitter Q&A where they're saying, should I just sell Son at this stage? Should I go for one of the other assets in midfield who are playing for a team that looks like they're going to score goals?
Yeah, that's crazy.
So yeah, we will come to that. Just before we move to the next game, I'm trying to say hi to a few others who've come in since we did the shout out. So obviously you've got FPL Penguin here. So I had a really good time with him on the guest stream on Friday. And obviously Chris Marin has been on there recently as well. So just say hi to you, mate. Hope you're well, Penguin. And hopefully we can collab again in the future. And oh, look, Squeak Squeak is here, or Squeeze Squeak. Yeah, it's an evolution. I'm going to get Robert Ducky on to do Sing Your Dialect on Net That Hall one day. I hope he's preparing his song.
If you squeeze him, he will squeak.
I want to see him squeak the entire, like, Christmas anthems, like all the Christmas carols. I want to squeak them all, man.
We'll make an album, the Rubber Ducky album, the FPL Rubber Ducky album.
Charity Christmas FPL album. Charity album.
Yeah. Exactly.
All proceeds go to charity. Okay, let's go to Leicester Watford. I think there's some Vardy owners who did hold on through that game last week. His EO went through the floor. I think he went from like 50% EO in the top 10K to like 14%. Him and Kane just did a like-for-like swap, didn't they?
Uh-huh.
Basically a differential now.
Yeah, and entering some nice fixtures. Leicester hosting Watford, predicting that XG of 0.8. Highest percent chances of one goal at 36.86%. So almost 37% chance of one goal, 25% chance of zero goals, and 24% chance of two goals. On the other side, Watford at Leicester, predicted net XG of 0.72, 37% chance of one goal, 26% chance of zero goals, and 23% chance of two goals. Again, we have kind of a surprising similarity in this matchup with the two teams. And that kind of doesn't compute in our that's not how we see the teams, right? We don't see Leicester and Watford as being somewhat evenly matched, but according to net XG, they are.
I think Ignatius says Leicester is just so bad. So maybe it is kind of Rodgers this season and how things have gone for Leicester and the implosion for the top four race the prior season.
Leicester and Leeds are like the opposite. Leicester are a team with a terrible manager filled with talented players. And Leeds is a team with untalented players with a great manager.
Just don't say Watkins is talentless, please.
Never. I would never say that. I don't know who would say that.
I don't know either. We've got absurdologists talking about going Kane to Vardy this week while we're on this Leicester slide. So I think as sick of the sight of Spurs as you may be, I'd be very nervous doing that, depending on what rank you're at. It could really come back to hurt, and all it would take is a Kane penalty and a Vardy blank. And I reckon that's a 100K red arrow right there.
And all it would take is another Kane blank and a Vardy pen, and then that's a massive green arrow right there because of the low ownership. So,
high reward.
Yeah, but since there are kind of two equal opposing arguments, does that make it a sideways transfer? Maybe not worth the transfer.
That's what I mean. I think for me, it's just the fact that like, if selling Kane is a priority, then I don't know what the other 14 look like, but there must be absolutely no other fighters.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Especially if you bought Kane last week. Like if you've had him since wildcard, you've had him since like game week 8 or 9 for this period, and he's just flattered to deceive the entire time, then I can understand the frustration and getting rid of him. But someone like me who just bought him, there's no way I'm going to do Vardy to Kane back to Vardy in two moves in like 2 weeks. I can't put myself through that.
If this were a Spaces, Rubber Ducky would be hosting, and he would tell you that that's a luxury transfer. You must have better things, more important things to do with your team.
Like, let's say, for example, you don't have James like me. I should be using my transfers to get to James, not moving one premium striker to another. If I was going to captain Vardy, maybe fair play, but I can't imagine captaining Vardy against a Watford that just slapped up United and sacked their manager compared to Liverpool at Anfield against Southampton.
Captaining would be compounding the mistake.
I think Absurdologist was just joking, but it was tongue-in-cheek. It's so hard to read tone in these live chat messages. Like, I'm always worried I'm going to tell someone to do something and they're going to actually do it.
Just if we go off on something, you were kidding, stop us before we go too far.
yeah, because like I told someone in a Twitter Spaces, they were asking me about like Ward-Prowse a few weeks ago, FPL Voices, and he was like, I think he's going to be great. I said, if you think he's going to get 20 to 25 points in the next three, which he could, go for it. And then he kind of put a tweet out and was like, so I've just taken a -8 move approved by FPL Nima. And like that week he sold like Cancelo, Rafinha, who got back-to-back 9-pointers since he sold him. So that kind of stuff. And I was like, no, man, I just said JWP was good. Like, I said, go with your guy. I never said take a -8 for JWP. Just
have a conversation. Don't follow instructions. That's...
Yeah. Like, I'm not here to give advice. Like, no, man. We're just talking about FPL.
Just talking.
Yeah, I'm just here to have fun. Like, please, whatever you do, do not take a -8 for any player that I recommend, because I'm probably taking the piss and trying to overtake FPL managers one manager at a time.
He's going to take you down. All right, two more matches to go, but they are pretty good ones. So we have Manchester City hosting West Ham. Predicted, this one's super interesting, predicted net XG of 0.99, which seems really low, but look at the percentages. 31% chance of one goal, 28% chance of two goals, only 16% chance of zero goals, and almost the same percent chance, 15.75% chance of three goals as zero goals with a 0.99 net XG. So again, context is everything, right? We know of City's prowess, and West Ham, have had a good defense, but they do have some weaknesses. There are some pockets of weaknesses, certainly on that left-hand side for West End's defense. So I don't know. This is probably one of the starkest difference between low predicted net XG, yet high predicted goals.
Yeah, what you mean, because they're both below one as well, but there's a very good chance here for like a 2-1 encounter or something.
Easily 2-1, right? And then, like you said, West Ham predicted net XG of 0.81 compared to City 0.99. 38.59% chance of one goal, 31.67% chance of zero goals, and 21% chance of two goals.
I think there's questions in the chat related to this fixture about playing Antonio or benching him. And there's also some comments about a Bowen hat-trick. I don't know about that, but... I think this is going to be a big game. I'd love it to be a draw just for the Arsenal's sake, to see two people above us drop points. That would be fantastic. But in some ways, I don't want Chelsea to run away with the title. I do want City and Liverpool to stress them out and pressure them a bit. So maybe we do need a City win, because I don't know when Chelsea's going to lose if they've only conceded four goals all season.
I mean, West Ham's going to play in a shell away, right? That they're going to be in a shell. I think Antonio is, I don't think he's necessarily a bench. I would start Tony over Antonio, but I would start Antonio with confidence as well, because he's going to be, you know, if West Ham sit in a shell, he's going to be the player that's highest up the pitch.
And he'll be like just inside the halfway line, waiting for a quick, rapid counter.
Waiting. If I were Moyes, I would tell Antonio, win us a pen.
Just get up the pitch, get taken out.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. So I've got Ignatius saying he would be benching. He says Cody or CR7. it's kind of decisions like this. Like, I don't condone like people who are benching 10 million plus assets for a Wolves defender, for instance. I just can't.
Condone any Cody or owners, to be perfectly honest.
The way I look at it is I always ask myself, who would I be most angry about hauling on my bench? So, like, let's say, Ben White, if I bench him this week for Tony, if Ben White gets a clean sheet and gets me 6-7 points and he's on my bench and Tony blanks and gets 2 points, that's 4 points. That's not going to make or break my season. Nah. It's not the end of the world. If, however, benching, you know, Tony and he got like a brace, I'd be pretty fucking livid. And that's what I would say about the likes of Antonio and CR7. Like, I would never be upset about Cody's points on my bench. Whereas if Antonio hauled on my bench, I will rip my hair out, I think. Like, there's a certain players that, like, I have him for a reason. I love him. I think he's underpriced. He's basically a premium for me from an underlying statistics point of view. And if you've kept him till now, A, I wouldn't be selling him this week, even though he's the most transferred out. And B, I would definitely be playing him. Like, I think he can get that goal against City. But yeah, so I'm predicting a 3-1 City. I'm hoping Foden gets me that hat trick I've been waiting for.
I'm gonna go with the 1-1. I like the draw here. I think West Ham will keep it tight.
I think they will. He's asking, can Ronaldo get a brace against Chelsea? Look, Ronaldo could fluke a goal against anyone, as we've seen tonight. So he can get a brace against Chelsea. Even though they've conceded four goals.
Yeah, well, that's the last matchup here. We'll see what NetXG says as far as the probability of that. Chelsea hosting Manchester United, predicted NetXG of 1.67. Highest percent chances of one goal at 32.34%. Two goals is 28%, and then zero goals at 17%. Three goals is 14%, almost 15%. Manchester United at Chelsea predicted net XG of 0.63. One goal, 37.78%. Zero goals, 28.83%. And two goals, 22.69%. What do you see here in these percentages?
Just quickly before this, so people are saying stuff that I just can't let go, like Cody's been amazing and stuff.
I think they're taking
I think so, but like, all I'm going to say is, like, I want attacking returns. I want players that when I watch are exciting. And as Mariner says, Cody to me seems the kind of player that will get a nosebleed every time he crosses the halfway line. And that's not exciting for me to watch to root on a clean sheet. His points, like, really, like, if I look at him this season, it's 6-1-2-2-7-2-6-0-6-2-2-2. Like, is what I was saying earlier about, like, I honestly could not care less if I bench that kind of points return. That is not something exciting. Antonio could get 2 and Cody could get 6 this week or even 8. Mm-hmm. That's still a minor points difference. I know that Antonio can get a brace or a hat trick against City or against anyone. So it's kind of like, to me, that is way more of something I do not want to see on my bench. So yeah, just going back to Man United, Chelsea then. So I think for this game, I don't know like how United can score against Chelsea because they just seem to be doing the impossible this year. Mendy has been world-class. So even where the rest of the defense maybe let him down, he then basically prevents the goals.
It's only 9%, the difference between the, you know, the almost 29% for 0 goals and almost 38% for 1 goal. So I think predicting 0 goals here, given the new, like you could have like for United's case, the new manager dip instead of a bounce.
I think it's a dip because This is not even a new manager, right? He's essentially the same guy like who's been assisting Ole through this entire tenure. I mean, it's like he's literally the same guy. Like, as
he's
like,
assisted.
He's been there running training, but as in he's been running the training. Like he's the reason they're doing shit.
But not, no, he's not the reason. I disagree with that. It's definitely not him at all. And he's gotten the experience of a multitude of managers that have passed through United over the years. And Carrick has always been there. He's played for them. And then after he played, he was assistant coach forever through all of them. So I think people don't really know what Carrick is. But I don't think we know what kind of manager he is or anything. I think the only thing we can say is that he has the experience of working with a bunch of managers that struggled at United.
He was brave today. He didn't rest Bruno for anyone who thinks that's what happened. He got dropped. This was a big game. They had to win.
It was a tactical decision. Bruno, when you put Ronaldo in there, just like in Portugal, Bruno doesn't fit. He doesn't have a natural fit. So you could do a rotation, but it was, you're right. It was a brave, brave decision.
And I think also when you look at it, he has, but when you look at it, I saw a stat today that obviously it's out of context, but like it did surprise me a lot. And it said that Bruno's not taken a shot on target in the Premier League for over 2 months. That is not something you want to be hearing about your best player in your team. That is not good. Fancy Pavilion is still going on about Cody. He's saying against Norwich, though, Cody has a high chance of potting. Like, Cody's not going to cross the halfway line is what I'm saying, I guess. Like he literally doesn't shoot.
It's ceiling versus floor. Cody may have the safest 6 points in him, but has 0% chance of anything more. He's not going to get bonus either, most likely. I mean, he barely touches the ball. He barely does anything. Whereas Antonio, you know, even if he scores 1 goal, could get bonus.
He'll get 9-10 points.
Yeah, so it's you're doing the ceiling play, knowing that the risk is low, that the risk is a loss of maybe 4 points. That's your floor by going.
I just can't imagine a world where I'd play a Wolves defender over Mikel Antonio, like someone who, if he played 3,000 minutes a season, could win a Golden Boot.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's just predict what we think then here. So I would be going for a very optimistic 1-1. I really hope so because I'm waiting one more week for the Chelsea defender and I really need that clean sheet wiped. But what would you go for based on the data?
I mean, the data, I think NetXG would probably predict. I mean, it's clear that it's looking at a 1-1, but the percentages are so close. I think Chelsea's form would maybe dictate a 2 goals, would side with the 28% rather than the 32%. 4% chance, I think, is enough. It's within a variance, so you can select the 2 goals. So just using common sense, I'd select the 2 goals for Chelsea. And you know, there's 9% difference between 0 goals and 1 goal for Manchester United. I do see a new manager dip for United, so I would go with the lesser one. So 2-0 Chelsea.
Well, if that's the case, I just hope it's some random player scoring those 2 goals and not bloody Reece James and Ben Chilwell.
Reece James attacking that left side, baby.
No, don't worry. Rudiger's going to get me another goal with a marauding run into the box. He bloody better.
He might.
So they're saying City have the best defense. Yeah, no, I think underlying wise, City have the best defense. And on, I think goals conceded, maybe, is it? But
Kind of across the board, City's defense is...
they are the best, aren't they? Whereas Chelsea, I think their numbers compared to last season's defensive numbers are not as good, but they're still keeping the clean sheets as it stands.
Thanks to Mendy, who's playing well this season.
So let's quickly go through the FDRs then. These are obviously thanks to Mariner while he's away on paternity. I can't do these the same justice he does, so I'm just going to read some of the top three and bottom three out for the podcast listeners. So these are the game week 13 matchup FDRs, and it's kind of ranked from 1 to 20. It uses Ben Krellin's 0 to 7 rating, so 7 being the best and minus 7 being the worst. We've got Liverpool is not surprisingly the best attack this week, or just generally in the league at the moment, with a 3.2 in attack. You've got Chelsea as second with 2.6, City is third with 1.8, and Brentford, interestingly, is fourth with 1.2 against that Everton team, which we'll come back to. In terms of attack, the bottom three, so Leeds is 20th with a minus 1.8, Everton is 19th with minus 1.6, and this is painful viewing for me, but Spurs is minus 1.1 in 18th. So, yeah, so it's a really a sad state of affairs to be looking at this. And we've all been loading up on Spurs assets, and the FDR just kind of doesn't have much hope for them.
No, right? I mean, against Burnley, they are third worst.
That is terrible. I think for anyone who's new to the FDR, there is also an intro to the FDR video on the playlist for the intros. Where Mariner, he does talk a little bit about how he does this. But correct me if I'm wrong, Gabe, but I believe there's kind of three elements to it. One third of it looks at the data from this season. One third looks at last season with fans. And one third looks at last season without fans.
Correct.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So I guess for teams like Spurs, like perhaps let's say like these numbers are bad, like they are based on history. But it would, even if they had a good game or two good games, it would still take maybe a few weeks to catch up. So I think sometimes the FDR can be a little bit retrospective looking. So in a situation like this where Spurs have a new manager, they have decent fixtures, you would hope they'd be better than the third worst attack in the league, but time will tell. So going on to the defense. So here we have Brighton is actually first this week in game week 13 with a 1.8. Brentford is second with 1.6. Burnley is third with 1.1 against that Spurs. Oh my God, why are you doing this to me? Crystal Palace is fourth. Arsenal are fifth. Okay, maybe that Ben White decision isn't as kind of cut and dry as I thought. So the bottom four for defence, Southampton is 20th with minus 3.2. Good luck if you're not captaining Salah this week. Man United is 19th. For defense, so yep, that Chelsea 2-0 is looking good for you, minus 2.6. West Ham defense is 18th, minus 1.8. So maybe that City game is going to be a bit more dangerous than we thought, and all I can hope for is like a 4-1 Antonio goal there.
Well, you'll notice that the defensive rankings will be the opposite of the attacking rankings. So Southampton is last because they play Liverpool, who's first in the attacking rankings. Man United is second last, and they play Chelsea, who's second. So that's how
it's like a total mirror of it. Yeah.
Yes, that's how these two FDRs match up, and you'll see it. You know, the matchup makes all the difference, right? But it is interesting to note that Brighton, with the best defense, you know, Mariners FDR does not like Leeds' attack at all, as you were saying earlier.
Yeah. No, I think this Sanchez clean sheet, hopefully, and you know, maybe he can actually make free saves for once. But my fear with Sanchez is I actually don't like him getting save points, because I always feel like if he has to make a save, he'll just concede.
And he's not good enough to rack up those saves.
Yeah, that stresses me out, honestly. It's true. I feel like I've been told a few times now not to bench Tony. So when I come back on next week's show, if I have benched him or sold him any hauls, I can't say I wasn't warned by both the metrics and the viewers.
Just make sure you send a lot of tweets and tag Nima in every single one of them.
Every time Tony gets a point.
Every time Tony gets a point. Nima, you just got a point for 60 minutes. Give it to him.
So these are the FDR averages. I guess this takes the attack and defense into account for game week 13. And yeah, like it still kind of looks quite similar, as you can imagine. But we've got Liverpool, Chelsea at the top, and then you've got kind of Brentford squeezing in ahead of Man City, Palace and Wolves. And then at the bottom, we have the 20th ranked team is Southampton, then United, Everton, West Ham and Villa and Norwich. So I think this is quite an interesting week. Players that we all wanted to sell, they all seem to have decent matches. It's like this Mbeumo and bloody Tony. Every week is the week to get rid of them. And they seem to be getting returns in the weeks after we actually wanted them.
Well, the combined Mariner, you know, likes to talk about when you combine the defense and attack, it's a good metric for the wingbacks. And look at the top five, the top four, Liverpool, Chelsea, Brentford, and City. So you better get those. If you don't have James, if you don't have Chilwell, if you don't have Trent, if you don't have Cancelo, you need to get them like now.
They're like the three best defenses, right? The three most attacking fullbacks you can get. Brentford's interesting here because there are some Rico Henry owners out there, aren't there?
So I talked about this last week as well. And what happens, so the base of the penetration triangle for Brentford used to be kind of on the left-hand side. It used to be Tony before the Newcastle game. It was Tony, and that was kind of on the left-hand side. And Tony being on the left-hand side and deep would prevent... he'd kind of like take away the space for any wing back to run up that left hand side. But now that Tony's been moved further up the pitch, that left side is open. And I mentioned it last week. If Tony gets moved further up the pitch, the left side will be open for that wing back. And true enough, Henry got a lucky assist on an own goal. But he was in very advanced position. So Henry could be an interesting cheap, like maybe next template defender.
I think, yeah, as the weeks go on,
right.
If the likes of Livermento blank 5 weeks in a row, his ownership's gotten so high that like there will be people who didn't get him at 4 mil who'll just kind of be like, fuck this guy, I'm selling him. And one of the first people they'll look at is the likes of Mitchell and obviously the cheaper Spurs assets in Dyer and Davies. And then they might also look at Rico Henry and the likes of kind of Lamptey, I guess, and White. There's a few cheap assets, but it's not really, there's no standout one apart from Livramento so far.
Beware owning Lamptey in a fixture crunch. I mean, wait till that's over. Get him after.
It is very dangerous. So let's go to the zonal matchups for game week 13 and beyond, looking all the way up until 16. I think I'll leave this one with you, Gabe.
All right. And we have King James here. Of course, it can only be him. And big shout out to Mariner. I mean, the guy had a baby and a birthday, and he still updated all this stuff for us. This is all him updating his tables.
Between the baby being born and his own birthday. Yeah.
Like, the baby's arriving in 20 minutes. I got to get this done. So big shout out. Thank you so much for doing this, Mariner. So in game week 13, I think just some of the ones to highlight, the best matchups, as usual, every game week, the best matchup is Liverpool on the right-hand side. Mostly because of the amount of chances that Liverpool create, more so than any of the opposition or anything like that. I will say last week it was at 5.0. This week it's at 4.8, so it went down a little bit. Some other kind of strong matchups across the board are, well, the interesting thing about the Liverpool-Southampton matchup is it is 4.8. It's always high on the right, but the center and the left are starkly low, or much lower, right? The center is at 3.6 and the left is at 3.3. And that's what I try to look for in these zonal matchups is if there's a big difference from one to the other. Some of them you'll see it'll be more geared towards the center or more of the flanks and so on. So we'll move on to the next one. Let's go to Wolves Norwich because this one's good at the right and the center. The right is at 4.4 and the center is at 3.9. Again, we spoke about the net XG matchup. One of the more boring matches of the game week, so I won't linger there too long. Manchester City matched up against West Ham, 3.7 from the left, 3.2 from the center, and 4.3 from the right. Who's going to play on that right-hand side? Is it going to be Gabriel Jesus, or is Mahrez going to get in? I don't know. Is Bernardo Silva going to be moved out there? Is he going to stay in center mid? I don't know. How do you see the City dynamic playing out?
Yeah, no, I'm really interested to see their lineup as well in the Champions League. Is it tomorrow they play?
Tomorrow, I think.
Yeah, it's not tonight. Okay. Every week I'm nervous about this Cancelo benching that's never come yet. But surely now with the fixtures piling up, like it's got to come eventually. But I think we just take it on the chin. In terms of the attackers, so I have Foden. I've had him for a few weeks. I'm I'm kind of really tempted by the City fixtures from Game Week 14 going forward. So there is a real part of me that is considering Bernardo Silva as an option and actually doubling up on the attack. And I'm really keen on Bernardo Silva, actually. He's someone who, if I don't go double City defense, I think I may find a way to squeeze him in.
Now, so I'll be writing about this this week. In addition to the Smith Rowe scouting report, I'll be writing a comparison of Bernardo Silva and Ilkay Gundogan. Why Silva over Gundogan for you?
I think for me, it's like when he first came, obviously it's been a long time since then, but I always thought he was going to be David Silva's replacement. And like what David Silva did in this team was, you know, like irreplaceable. And he was such a legend of the Premier League, maybe one of the best foreign imports of the more modern Premier League era, just in terms of longevity. And obviously he won the titles with multiple managers there. But then it kind of looked like he was out in the summer, didn't it? Like he wanted out. It didn't sound like he was going to stay. Sounded like Foden had become the successor to David Silva, and out of nowhere, like the guy was just the most ultimate professional. Like he let all that summer just get fallen behind him, you know, did the opposite of what Kane did, didn't get his move and played a lot of consistent minutes. And I think what I like about him is that with De Bruyne, for instance, when he's got COVID, we've seen, but in other scenarios, he can play in any of the CM roles. He can play as one of the eights. He can play on the wings. He can play a false nine. I just think he's had a lot of time in that team. And I think the dressing room has a lot of respect for him and they trust him. All the players trust him and they look up to him. He's one of the more experienced players in that squad. And I think for me, that's exciting. Gundogan I like as well. Obviously, we saw his heroics last year with De Bruyne out. But I just don't think De Bruyne is going to be out long enough for me to want to go there. Like it worries me going for Gundogan, even if he might have like penalties, for instance. That worries me. With Bernardo Silva, I genuinely believe that he is like Champions League is about to wrap up, right? There's kind of a match day tomorrow, one more match day, and then it's not going on till like February again. And I could see Bernardo Silva being rested in stuff like the EFL Cup, the FA Cup, actually they're out of the EFL Cup, but in the FA Cup. And I genuinely believe he will always have a place in that team. Like for me, he's like the new David Silva in that team.
He does seem that way. And his versatility certainly speaks to, you know, his kind of integral role for the team and how his teammates see him. Like he's, and the other thing I like is last season he played a more supporting role. He didn't start as much. He would come in and taking lessons from last season and coming and being such a leader and such a focal piece of the team that the team relies on him so much this season. I think that shows development and maturity that you can take your benchings, you can learn from them, you can improve, and he's like the model player. So I think Pep could highlight him. What I like about Gundogan is he has such a motor. He just keeps going and going and going. So, you know, last season he got hot during the fixture crunch. And I wonder if Pep sees that motor and he's like, this is my fixture crunch guy, that he'll just go and go and go and go and go. And then come Champions League, then I'll start resting him again. And then the other thing I like about Gundogan is his motor is one thing. And then the other thing is it looks like he's on pens. When Sterling went down just outside the box, it was Gundogan that picked up the ball that he was going to take that pen. So
I was confused by that because people were saying like, oh, Sterling's going to take it. And then I heard that actually was being passed off onto Gundogan instead. So
yeah, Sterling should not take any.
I think the only reason Sterling would take it is because he's trying to get himself a buyer in the summer. Like he's looking to get out the club by the sounds of it.
Penalty kick's not going to do anything to that.
The last few he took for that same reason didn't go so well for him.
It could hurt.
Damage his appeal. I think it is a tough one. They're the same price, aren't they, Bernardo Silva and Gundogan?
Exactly the same price. Exactly the same 7.2, both of them, which it makes it really interesting selection. Now, we saw in the transfer trends that people are moving towards Bernardo Silva, so that might edge it for you in that direction. Like, well,
to try and be with the pack or to get the EO, yeah.
Exactly. Be with the pack, not diverge too much from the pack. That's your playing style. But also take advantage of if one is going to price rise, it'll probably be Bernardo Silva. He'll be the first to price rise.
0.1, 0.2,
if you can catch something, that might do it for you. Or you might be a different type of manager, right? And you might think, well, he could nick a pen anytime. Yes, he plays deeper, but that's playing deeper is also his strength. Coming in from those deep positions, we saw him come come in from those deep positions quite a bit last match. So he is starting to be more involved. It's a really interesting decision, I find.
The Observer just makes a really interesting point about Bilva being the late runner on the right, whereas on the left, the late runner is actually Cancelo. So it's like they just send him in. Like, he's basically filled up the entire creative void left by De Bruyne. Cancelo's just taken the mantle and said, well, I'll create our goals.
That's true. That's true. But what I will say is Gundogan actually, whereas last season he would come in more from the left, this season he's coming in, I think he's bending his run towards the middle and giving Cancelo that space on the left-hand side. And do you want the player running into a position, into the nine position, which is a position City lack because of their personnel? It might create more better opportunities for him. But it's a really fascinating, like, just tactical study. So I hope to put that matchups article out by Thursday.
Great. Just a question on the zonal matchups before we go on. From Sankar Narayanan. So they ask about game week 13 to 16, I think, in the center matchups, zonal matchups for West Ham. It's a 2.8. They're wondering about kind of selling Antonio here. And maybe for Gabriel Jesus, just to give some context as well.
Yes. And I mean, I think the Antonio sell, like you're saying, is this week. Like, I think this is the absolute last week if you're thinking.
Like, if you haven't already got rid of him. Yeah. Now it's really the last week to go for it.
Because look at that center matchup against City at 2.0. It is the lowest of the week. So if you sell this week, and then if you're looking at, you know, Gabriel Jesus, if you,
he would be on the right. Would he show up on the right? Because it's the Man City right we're looking at in the zonal.
We don't know. Right. It could be Mahrez on the right and Jesus in the center and Foden on the left.
I don't think Jesus will play in the center ever again. So that's just my opinion.
I think he's
done out there.
So if I agree with you. I think Pep has finally uncorked the winger of Jesus. Then who plays? So what is it? Maybe Sterling plays on the left, Foden in the middle, or Foden on the left, Bernardo Silva as the false nine.
I think Sterling and Grealish will rotate that left wing, in my opinion.
Grealish is injured still.
He's still out. Okay, so Sterling. I think Foden can play the left wing, and Bilva can be like a false nine or a left wing or right wing. So that's the problem. That's the thing. They're also interchangeable. Like, last week, I know friends who brought in Jesus and he didn't play. So it's like, I can't be, like, regardless of the matchups here, I can't be selling Antonio, the nailed guy who's going to play for West Ham. When they're in the top four, they basically conceded like no goals in Europe. They're in the semi-final of a cup, having knocked out City and United, is it? Like, I can't be selling the talisman striker of a team like that I want back in 3 weeks for a striker who's playing out of position as a winger, who he's been incredible this year, but I genuinely don't know when he plays or when he won't, and if he's subbed early. Like, there's no one to replace in the West Ham team for Antonio. Like, who is going to play there instead of him?
And we mentioned the forward subs. All the subs on the forward line at this point, they're almost sideways because everyone sucks for the most part. You know, and that's hyperbole, but just generally speaking,
like, Jimenez has done well. So, like, if you sold Antonio to Jimenez, say, 3 to 6 weeks ago, you got away with only one goal from Antonio in five, and Jimenez got 3 goals and 3 assists and 6 starts. But for me, it feels like in 2 weeks' time, Wolves' fixtures will turn, and at the exact same time, you're going to start looking at wanting Antonio back around game week 16 or 17 or 18. And it's just like, I think the hope is if you sell him now, one more blank from him and he'll be like 0.2 cheaper to buy back. So maybe you can buy him back for a similar price that you sell him now. But I propose the other argument, which is if he scores this week against City, just one goal, even in a 5-1 loss, he could cost you 0.4 million more to buy back, let alone dropping 0.2 from here by the time you need him. And for me, that's playing with fire because he started at 7.5. That's the price I have him.
Yeah.
At 7.5, he's a season keep for me unless he gets crocked.
Kind of, and that's the thing. You are losing that value that at which you bought him.
Now, again, if you've already sold him, fair enough. You made the right choice, as seen by what's happened in the last 5 weeks. But I just feel like we're getting very close. We're like 2-3 weeks out from when all the threads will be why you need to have Mikel Antonio and why he might be a captaincy option because Salah's at AFCON in game week 22, whatever. Like, it just feels like this is the last week to do it if you're going to do it. And if you don't sell him this week, I can't condone selling Antonio next week after a blank against City this week.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything on the zonal matchups before we go to the Twitter questions? I'm just having a look if there's any other interesting stuff here. I guess Liverpool on the right is a 4.8, which is pretty
good. Continue to be good.
Yeah, that's just always that. They're just their numbers, their attack, everything about this Liverpool.
Chelsea's game. Right as well, I think, is important to note at 4.2. And then in game weeks 13 to 16, it remains at 4.0. So Reece James, if just in case we haven't mentioned his name on in the show yet, to get him in.
Wolves,
what else?
Wolves is interesting, 3.8 on the right as well.
Wolves, right,
between
4.4.
Game week 13 to 16.
Yeah, it remains good on that right-hand side for even for people that maybe want to keep Jimenez, that don't see a reason to move it in any direction. That right-hand side remains okay for him, huh?
You could hold him even after the two good fixtures end because he can still get you some steady points.
Yep, look at game weeks 13 through 16, Everton's flanks. Once Richarlison comes back, I don't know. I think Calvert-Lewin is due to be back soon as well. Doucouré should be healthy in the next week or two. If they start getting healthy, they could kind of creep up on us, and there could be some assets there. Calvert-Lewin could emerge as an option, not in 13 to 16, but 16 and beyond.
He's in my thinking. Calvert-Lewin is definitely in my mind for, I think it was like game week 18 or 19 or something around that time. He was such good value last season, so I'm excited to see him come back. I think this Everton team have really been struggling, but fingers crossed that once their stars come back, things will get a little bit better. Just a final comment on Zonal from Absurdologist. He talks about Newcastle and Leeds are the only kind of non-top teams with three or higher on the left, center, right from 13 to 16. So I think, what does that kind of say to us? So I guess with Newcastle, there was obviously the big Callum Wilson bandwagon. I think if you didn't get him last week, I wouldn't get him against Arsenal this week personally, but I am biased. I'd get him for the next two juicy home fixtures that he has. So that is an option. Maybe keep Tony this one last week against Everton. Tony in game week 14 could become Wilson. Obviously, we've got St. Maximan. He's a bit cheaper, but I think I'd cough up the extra for Wilson personally. And then on Leeds, I guess that 13 to 16 kind of does say to us, like, you should probably keep Rafinha if he's back for the weekend, even though I'm looking to sell him.
we have Leeds of 3.4 on the left, 3.4 in the center, and 3.0 on the right. The, you know, zonals are just a piece of the puzzle, right? Take the zonals, take the FDR, take NetXG, take your own eye test, put it all together, give it your own weighting, what you value more. You know, you find your own opportunities. I still read it as a tough one, away to Brighton.
I think it is, and Brighton was ranked in the FDR as number one for defense this week, as per that same thinking. Just on Wilson as well, I didn't realize this, but he is on four yellow cards, if that's something some people like. But I remember Diego Costa was on four yellow cards for 10 weeks and scored straight and never got suspended. So this kind of information that us kind of obsessed managers have is sometimes not great for us because we overthink things, and my casual friends at work, like, they come over to me at lunchtime on a Friday. We'll be deadline on a Friday in 3 hours. They'll say, oh, look, I didn't know four of my players have flags. And then they'll just like click transfer out. They'll look at whatever the player in that midfield or striker position with the highest points is that they can afford. They'll click buy. And then a few weeks later, they've overtaken all our ORs. And we're the ones who spend all day, every day breathing this game. So I think there is sometimes, I like to go with my gut, even though it can't really be quantified. In this scenario, my gut, I don't know if you've read Blink by Malcolm Gladwell, it reminds me of that, where I think I am using lots of data, as you say, and giving them different weightings, but it feels like a gut decision because it's made instantaneous, but it's not really. It's years of playing FPL 100%. And years of having made these 50-50 choices, and just the sheer number of times things went well or badly for me, I'm almost like subconsciously conditioned to lean towards certain moves based on my own manager playstyle and based on all the stuff that's gone wrong for me in the past, which is more times than not.
Well, Malcolm Gladwell is brilliant. I listen to his revisionist history all the time, and it's true that that is how our brains work. That's how survival works, right? And that's actually how bias works as well. Whatever we're familiar with, that's what we tend to favor. Whatever's like programmed, like this is familiar, this is safe, over and over and over and over again, then we tend to have a bias towards those things. And that's it's healthy because these things, that kind of, that mechanism within us help us survive, right, as a species. But we also need to constantly question it to make sure we're evolving and we're not just falling into patterns that we should be breaking.
And this is for life and not just FPL, obviously, but...
I regressed back to the philosophy, my bad.
For anyone who missed the philosophy of the week from Lao Tzu, definitely go back on the video on demand and check it out. And just say hi to FPL Dallas, Harry Dawson. We've got a few of the regulars back here who've tuned in. We'll get to your live questions. We're actually almost there. So I'll start to take you to the alchemist, I think, at this stage, so you can talk about Maxwell Cornetto, as Mariner calls him for the podcast.
That's right, the Cornetto ice cream. So the alchemist this week is Maxwell Cornet. And the quote is, no matter what he does, every person on earth plays a central role in the history of the world. And normally he doesn't know it. So apologies for the gender-specific language in there. It's not inclusive, but I did want to quote the literature as it is. And Maxwell Cornet has kind of gone under the radar. I didn't even kind of like consider him, barely even recognize his existence. It's like, I don't, because he plays for Burnley. But he's a player. And there's something that that James from Planet FPL said on their pod this week. He was talking about how what Cornet adds tactically to Burnley. And he said that, well, before Cornet, teams could just play deep on Burnley because they know they're going to send a long ball to Wood. But now with this added element, Wood has been checking in a little bit deeper. The places where he's receiving the ball is a little more isolated and a little deeper, less around the box. And he's pulling defenders out. And when he's doing that, Cornet is running into spaces behind, and with the upcoming matchup against Spurs, I think it's exactly the type of matchup for Cornet. I think he has some other upcoming matchups where teams do leave space in behind, where they won't play deep on him, and I think he could have a good little run here of, I don't remember exactly, but like 4 to 6 game weeks.
So he has Tottenham home, Wolves away, Newcastle away, West Ham home, Watford home, Villa away, Everton home.
So if we go through them, Tottenham, Tottenham leave spaces in behind, Cornet will run in. Wolves, you'll think of Wolves as a good defense, but the reason Wolves' defense is good is because of their press. They do have a decent press, but Wolves also leave spaces in behind. They just haven't been found out yet. Cornet could find them out. Who's after Wolves?
Newcastle,
enough said. Who's after Newcastle?
West Ham. That'll be a bit difficult.
West Ham will be difficult, but West Ham leaves space on their left-hand side. So it depends where, you know, Cornet usually plays on the left, so he won't be able to take advantage of that. But we'll see. Not exactly the best matchup for him, you're right.
And then kind of Watford and Villa from there, and Everton.
Watford and Villa, Everton, they all leave space. So all I think it's the time of the Cornetto.
I like him. So I saw him, I think it was season before last now, but when he was playing in, is it Ligue 1, and he was playing as like a wing back in some games, and I just really liked what I saw of him. And when I heard he was coming to the Premier League, I didn't expect a team like Burnley to go for him. I felt that his tactical style was so different to what Burnley usually do, so it is interesting. Like, maybe that was it, Barcelona is slowly building a team of skillful playmakers.
Well, it's interesting. Cornet he's basically the next Antonio. I remember Antonio was wing back for a long time.
Yeah.
Who's the scouting guy at Burnley?
Kane was a left back, right?
Right. It's the players that touch the most in most games, that touch the ball the most in most games, are the wing backs or the fullbacks. They get the more touches than any other player typically. But Cornet played wing back at Lyon last season, but the scouting department, like, they saw striker potential in him. And so they changed his position. They've been playing him up top, and it's yielding incredible results.
I'm bringing him in this game week
over one of the City boys. I'm going to get the either Gundogan or Bernard Silva next week. And this week I'm bringing in Cornet.
So dodge that West Ham game for them. Yeah. I think for me, like, I brought him into one of my fan team entries in the season long last week because I just thought, let's go for it. And obviously he repaid me. But I think it's difficult, isn't it? Because you've got the likes of, say, Smith Rowe and Gallagher, who are close enough to his price now. So I think it's kind of like those three are competing maybe for one spot. But there could be a case made to have two of them and have a five-man midfield, right? And have a dead third striker, I think. There's questions about whether he might be going to AFCON as well. I don't know about that. I think it's worth checking in. Let's go on from the Alchemist just to look at the Twitter questions and then go to the live questions. Before that, we're just going to give ourselves a second to have a drink. And obviously, this is all about the strategic partnership with allaboutfpl.com, who I'm a co-editor with, and they came third in the Football Content Awards for Best Editorial. So that was an incredible evening to come up against the likes of Hub and Scout, that are companies with investors, with CTOs and tech departments and staff, versus a site started 2 years ago for free by some kids in Chennai in India, and obviously came on in January last year to help with the site. But it's incredible what we're really proud of what's happened. And obviously NetThatHall are a big partner of theirs. And in case you've never checked them out, here's Mariner telling you from his paternity leave why you should.
Are you craving more FPL content? Then look no further than allaboutfpl.com. Head over there for weekly articles from some of the top content creators on the planet. So what are you waiting for? Head over to allaboutfpl.com, the website for all your FPL needs.
Yeah, so what are you waiting for? And thanks to everyone who has tuned in while you're here. If you have enjoyed the show, or if you've just tuned in, please do hit that like and subscribe. It's the first time I've said it all stream, but I didn't want to be pushy. Normally when I ask, there's always a quick live dislike. So whoever you are, thanks for coming back every week and disliking every time I ask for the like.
I have to say that one dislike makes the likes more meaningful, because if everything is just one way, then you think, well, maybe it's just herd mentality and people aren't really thinking for themselves. But the fact that we have the one gives us some kind of aesthetic purity. So yeah, we want to thank you for strengthening us.
Yeah, nothing can be 100%, but that's right. At least it doesn't look like we've been buying the likes, because otherwise, why would we buy a dislike with it?
I hear that happens.
It does. I hear it's very cheap. Yeah, I hear it's very cheap to buy subscribers. Some channels are not naming any. Maybe
it's even cheaper to buy dislikes.
Mm-hmm. I'll do it for free if anyone wants to point me towards any channels they dislike. But let's go to the captaincy metric, because I just realized that we are probably going to have very little time for the live questions and Twitter questions. So I think with this, we'll just go through rapidly. And obviously these will be on Twitter anyway later in the week. So this is just this season so far. The metric has a 75% success rate. The 3 weeks it blanked were in game week 2 when Salah got 3 points, when Antonio got minus 1 points in game week 4, and when Lukaku got 2 points in game week 7. So beyond that, it's essentially picked Salah every other week and it hasn't failed. And in game week 3, it picked Antonio with a 22-point haul. So doing well so far, not quite at the 80% success rate of last season yet, but hopefully when AFCON happens, we might see a little bit more going on. I'll let you go through kind of the game week 13 Mariners captaincy metric then.
Okay, unsurprisingly, I mean, Salah comes in. So last week, it was a little bit closer. This week, he's blowing everybody out of the water. Again, he comes in at 108. Compared to second place Mane, who's at 95. Vardy's in third place at 83. So there's Mane and Salah at 95 and 108 respectively. And then the next one is Vardy at 83, Foden at 80, and Trent at 79. We could go over the numbers. I don't think we have to go over it in too much detail. This is kind of like the obvious stuff. It's impressive, 42% haul. Interestingly, Trent has the same haul percentage, 42%, but Salah with a 92% return rate. The thing that you hate with captaincy is a blank. And if you're guaranteed, if someone says you have a 92% chance of, or only an 8% chance of a blank, I mean, you just have to go for it. That's not.
I think with what we've seen this week earlier in the episode, for anyone who missed it, the FDRs, I go back and check it. I think everything points to Liverpool. I could be talked into a Reece James captaincy against United. Beyond that, I think it's kind of Salah or bust, in my opinion. Trent is 42 as well. As you say, I think just to call out Cancelo, Chilwell and James, they're all 33% haul. So It's an incredible season when kind of four players who have the biggest haul percentage are all fullbacks from the best defenses in the league. And then you've got Salah there. Mane, I think FPL rushed the release and had he been priced a bit lower, he would be a real meaningful asset for a double up in the attack. But at that price point, I can't see myself going for him over Salah, and I can't really justify both.
And what's keeping James down, I think, is the rotation, risk of rotation at 49% across the season. So we don't expect 50% rotation from Reece James. So I think if that were to be changed to, you know, a number more representative of the current reality, you could potentially see him up near the maybe just he below Trent.
Top five or six, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we might need to look at his rotation from earlier in the season because we might want to change that. So I think let's go to the Twitter questions, we'll come to the live questions. So guys, do start thinking about your live questions. I ran out of time to put the Twitter questions in a screenshot, so I'm going to very unprofessionally just drag them onto the screen. And then I'm going to try and zoom in because I don't think anyone can see them. So the first one says, from FPL Smash, Chris Martin, friend of the show, what to do with Brentford assets? So I think I don't want to repeat anything we said, so we'll make these quick fire and get to the live Q&A from the audience who's actually here. So Chris, if you go back, there's been a lot of talk about this matchup against Everton, about how great it is, about how we're expecting like a 2-0 for Brentford and how the new change in system with Tony spearheading furthest up the pitch. This is not the week you want to be benching or selling him, which is currently what I'm thinking about doing, but don't be a fool like me and go net that haul with Tony this week. If it's Mbeumo, sell that prick. Yeah, sell that prick if it's Mbeumo.
The post is not the target. It's just...
No, it's not. Seven shots off target, I call that. Wow. I don't consider the post anything special. FPL fella, so we met up at the London meetup, which I aptly named hashtag Harryface to deflect all blame onto him for anyone who wasn't invited. Since then, I've been mediating for a few days and trying to solve many of the FPL community's beefs, which I'm happy to say I'm on a 50% success ratio now. And there's one more beef that I'm hoping to solve, and then maybe the London community can all meet up without
beef. That hashtag, that sets us up perfectly for the Ball Shavers sponsorship. Hashtag Harry Fest.
Yeah, Harry Fest. I said to them, each time we do a London meetup, I'm just going to call it like Someone Fest. This time it was Harry Fest because if someone, you know, if you don't know FPL Tips, FPL Harry, as he's rebranded, was on Wildcard. He only spoke about it for the last 3 weeks in every single tweet. Thank God he's never going to talk about it again. So moving on, Danube Joe, he is here. So Rafinha to Gallagher for game week 13. Quick fire, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's reasonable. I think Eze coming back could be a concern. I think Milivojevic is still somewhat a concern, but Gallagher's a player and he's such a focal point of the team that it's a reasonable transfer. I prefer Cornet as discussed, and I like ESR's kind of tactical and zonal matchups a little bit better than Gallagher's, but I think Gallagher's still a great pick.
Yeah, no, I like Gallagher. I think Gallagher, FPL doesn't do him justice with the way the point scoring works. In other formats like Sky, he's basically a template must-have pick because everything else he does, that racks up the bonus points, whether it's kind of interceptions, ball recoveries, tackles tiers, passing tiers. Like, it's a shame so many players are not an option in FPL purely because of their laziness to ever do anything about the game apart from reskin it and change the deadline so that even less elite managers, a small select group of them, have access to this info. So much about leveling the playing field, my ass. Sam FPL, regret FPL. So Vardy versus Kane. I think all the numbers today point to Vardy, especially this week. I have Kane. I won't be going back to Vardy, and I'll just be praying that over the next three, Kane does not get outscored by Vardy, who I sold. But for me, it's all the numbers point to Vardy. I'm biased in that I think Kane is averaging, I was saying to someone, 23 league goals a season for seven Premier League seasons straight. And for me, a player of world-class ability, you can't look at the sample size of 12 games this season and, you know, he's going to get the other 22 goals he's been averaging for 7 years straight. He is going to get them eventually. And they better be like back-to-back hat-tricks for me in the coming weeks. That's what I can say. It's Kane's not nice owning a Spurs. Season, no, he's going to averaging 23. So as long as he gets something that doesn't ruin his average, even 15.
It would drop. His average would drop. 15 is reasonable, though.
I think he can get 15. Yeah. So King or Dennis? I'd go. Is King potentially now on penalties with Saar's double miss?
He is. I think he is on penalties, but he's more expensive, right?
He is. He's about 0.5 million more.
It's easier to bench Dennis in a tough matchup. But Dennis, I think, is 5.2. Heading into the fixture crunch, a somewhat nailed.
He's 5.2. A nice third striker if you intend on benching him most weeks.
Yeah. Like King,
I wouldn't buy Dennis as a starting 11 pick every week. I wouldn't do
no,
that.
No, he's depth for the fixture crunch. And he has a bad run of upcoming fixtures. But then after that, but you probably won't need him in the coming like 2 weeks.
Dennis
anyway.
Has risen, by the way. So he's 5'3". And I think they're saying King's 5'6", but I thought King was 5'7" at this stage. But I don't know. They're very close in price, though. So that might sway you. He has a final question. What's eating Brian Mobomo from Alchanos? Does he have a magnet in his balls? So we're going to make this episode a 18 plus now when I upload it later. I don't know what's wrong with him, but I think what I've noticed is Brentford were doing so well at the start of the season and their system worked exactly how Thomas wanted. And actually the reason they weren't winning was because Mobomo just wasn't clinical and wouldn't finish the chances that the entire system was built around creating for him, hence why they've now been testing the other systems in training and why Tony's the furthest forward, because clearly Mbeumo has a problem hitting the target.
Mbeumo, he also can play wing back. So
those three systems, right?
Yeah. So I think he's going to be more and more a support player and less a player that's in and around the box. Like, he's a sell for me.
Yeah, I think if you had him, you maybe keep him this one last week, but he would be on the way out for me. Especially with the other options in that price point. We talked about Gallagher, Cornet, Smith Rowe. Like, there's a lot of good options at that price point. I don't think I'd be holding on to him. This is just a bit of fun. Like, there's not a question, but Malcolm Brown, someone in his mini league took a minus 20 point hit, but got a 103 point week and had a game week rank of 4,500. So sometimes hits do work. 99% of the time, if you do that minus 20 every week, you'll probably finish a 5 million rank. Yeah. Ignatius Brian L1. So
who's in the
quick
chat?
RMT. So we've got your team up, Ignatius. So we've got 2 free transfers, 2 million in the bank. What would we do if we were him? Well, FBL thinker says get Benteke and triple captain him. Cody or Livramento to James or Chilwell. So I think getting that second Chelsea defender, one of the fullbacks, is quite exciting. I think Traore is definitely out, just seeing him on the bench. The fact that you have Traore against Norwich away and like he's just nowhere to be seen, so he's lost on your bench. I think that's just money being wasted. I'd be getting
Traore him. And Cody to James and Cornet.
That's an exciting two moves. If he can he's got 2 million in the bank, he can definitely afford that.
Yep, that's what I would do.
Ronaldo, Chelsea away. I guess at this stage, if you've got Ronaldo, you probably...
He's got bigger problems.
Does he? Like, I don't know. I would probably just do Ronaldo to Kane with one free transfer and Cody to James and be done with it.
And keep
just strengthen the 11. And then Traore can become Gallagher, Cornet, Smith Rowe, anyone next
maybe.
Week. He's already got Gallagher, but...
Maybe. I think at this point, you just keep Ronaldo. You're going to want to bring him back. You're going to go Ronaldo to Kane now, and then in 3 weeks, you're going to go Kane back to Ronaldo. And you're going to Kane?
I would, because I think Kane's going to outscore Ronaldo in these next four. We've seen Ronaldo get benched when there's a Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday deadline, and that's what next week is, right?
Yeah, but we've seen Kane play this season, and it's not...
Yeah, but at least he plays. At least he plays. Like,
Ronaldo plays, just because he's gotten benched.
Ronaldo's not playing tonight, Saturday, Tuesday, and Saturday. And that's 3 game weeks in 7 days.
True. That's fair.
And it's Chelsea away. Like, if you can't sell him before Chelsea,
but you're going to want him right back. You're gonna.
Yeah, but he's not going to lose value on him.
I wouldn't go for Kane. I think it's a sideways move from one player that doesn't play when he is playing.
But it depends, because if they don't want to buy Ronaldo back, I mean, that's the other thing. I think too many teams I've seen have been locking in which United player they're bringing. So, like, I've got Kane and it's a placeholder for Ronaldo. And some people have Son and it's a placeholder for Bruno or Sancho or Rashford. It's like, I don't think we should think like that. Like, we don't know what 4 or 5 weeks from now will hold. We might want to go and get someone like a Sancho if he picks up form or a Rashford if he's starting. Right. Like, we might choose to go that way. And actually, at that point, you might then be thinking, well, I just kept Ronaldo through all of this. He sat 2 of the 5 games and Now I'm looking to sell him to move to Rashford. So that's what I mean. Like, I just don't know what you're going to do eventually.
Yeah, but I will say, I'm going to stick to my earlier point as well, that I don't think forward transfers are really worth it right now because there are no forwards that are killing you.
That's true. That is true. And Kane versus Burnley, as the data showed earlier, if you go back and watch, it's not doing great stuff. So FPL fledgling, he's got one free transfer, no money. He's benched Antonio at the moment and started Mbeumo instead. I think for me, if I had both Tony and Mbeumo, I'd be very comfortable benching Mbeumo for Antonio. But yeah, like you were saying, you'd play Tony ahead of Antonio. I guess that was under the understanding that you only had Tony, right?
Yeah, I'd play Antonio over Mbeumo and not double up on Brentford.
I'd even consider starting him over Smith Rowe, but don't do that because I'm not going to give that advice. Start Smith Rowe. We have a bounce back game coming. So Vardy Boy is another regular of the show. I know Spurs are going to go on a 3-game period. I've owned some for 4 weeks. He's done absolutely nothing to justify his price. I want to sell him for a City mid, Smith Rowe or Gallagher. So I would not be selling Son for someone half the price unless you're using that money the same week. Personally, you could tempt me into a Foden if you didn't have him. But again, like I wouldn't be going for that Bernardo Silva or Gundogan as like my first and only City mid. As I said before, I would want them as a second one personally.
Yeah, and I'd say that you probably got when you got Son, you got him for these upcoming game weeks, and certainly for Burnley and Brent and Norwich. Sorry, so game weeks 13.
I'd want to hold him for Norwich.
Yeah, and so if you sell now and he hauls, then how are you gonna feel?
Because then you're going to be like, I made the right decision. I planned for exactly this scenario. And it's what you said, Gabe. Don't make your moves forward planning too far. So you've almost got itchy feet because you planned for these fixtures. It's gone badly leading up to them. And are you now really going to sell him before the period in which you literally planned to have him for? And how will you feel if he now holds versus, say, Foden, you don't own him right now, potentially. If he holds, you're not going to feel very different because you never had him. If I had Son and I sold him now, and he hauled, I think it would make me quit the season.
Yeah, I mean, you brought him in against West Ham. Maybe not the best week to bring Son in, but then you maybe expected some returns against United or Everton, and you didn't get anything, unfortunately. Leeds was always, you know, doubtful because they have been playing better, certainly at home. But this is the fixture for Son. Keep him for now, I think.
I would keep him. So I think on that note then, oh no, that wasn't an RMT. That's fine. So I thought we were going to give him an alternative move, but we went, let's go quick fire and we'll come to the live questions. There's a few good ones in the chat now. So this is from FPL Planner, quick RMT. He's got three options to do one transfer. You've got two moves, 1 million in the bank. 308 overall rank. Wow. That is incredible, Planner. Go and win the whole thing, man. So sensible long-term move, Mbeumo to Gallagher. More exciting attacking punt, Mbeumo to Cornet. And a fixture punt, five at the back, Livramento to Reguilon. There's pending Jota and Rafinha news because he has both. Mm. I think both will be fine. They're both going to probably play this weekend. So it seems a bit difficult to condone selling Mbeumo this week. But if it was for Cornet, I wouldn't mind it. I think over the next five, I would expect Cornet to outscore Mbeumo. That's the move I like the most. I don't know if you have an alternative thought between the three he's chosen.
No, absolutely not. I would favor that as well.
I wouldn't be looking to get that fifth expensive defender.
No.
Personally, I wouldn't do that. Is Foden still a hold?
Yes.
I think from game week 14 to 20, Foden will be the highest scoring mid. I think those City fixtures are a breeze and Champions League will have ended. Foden seems to be the most important player at City these days. More so than De Bruyne was, because he just doesn't play anymore as often. So Foden's taken that mantle in my eyes. Kane or Son after a sample of one game. I think Kane's like issues over this 12 weeks in the summer and his disinterest in playing for Spurs have almost like destroyed Son's like enthusiasm for playing football for this team. He just signed a new contract and he did not look like he gave a shit himself either. It's like he forgot he plays for Spurs when I watched bits of the last game.
Son's playing out of position. He's playing too centrally, and he's a little bit lost in Conte's system right now. They're both problems. Kane is getting more. He got more chances last game. He may be closer to the box. He does look a little bit more motivated, but you know, he's what, 12 plus million?
2 million more, yeah.
I mean, so it's, you know, that balance. I went Son. I don't regret it. I'm going to hold him for a couple more weeks.
I think it depends who you sell, right?
I think I would move on any of them right now.
But that's what I mean, because if you had Foden or Jota, like, are you really going to move them on to Son? And I if you had Vardy as well, I wouldn't go to Kane this week, which is why I said if I had Ronaldo, I would be tempted. That's probably the only striker, maybe Antonio, if you've got the money. I think this week I could be talking to Antonio Ronaldo moving on. And the final question from Johnny Belfast before we go to the live chat questions that have appeared. So Watford have a decent run of fixtures from Gaming 16 to 27. Is Saar back in the picture, or are you thinking more about Josh King and Dennis, if at all? So, yeah, like, I've really liked Dennis' move. It is an option. I am considering whether I could, like, get Dennis and upgrade White to Reece James as my two moves. Although I think that the rises that have happened may be 0.1 short. I love Josh King from his previous times when I've owned him. And I think there was a double game week a few years ago when he was a midfielder and he outscored every single double game week player that week with like a 19-point haul. So I have fond memories of King, but I don't get that excited by Watford. I think I would be looking at Dennis just because he's that 0.3, 0.4 cheaper, and I treat him as that third enabler striker that I can bench through the fixture crunch. And if I don't have a starting player, he comes on and helps me. That's how I would look at it. And I'm not looking at Saar. I just can't do that to myself anymore after what happened with him earlier.
Yeah, I mean, so Dennis is 5.3 and King is 5.6. So it looks like King is on pens. But what I will say about Saar is that he takes up a valuable midfield slot. And we have a plethora of options in midfield, and we're kind of scrambling for options on the front line. So just because of their position, but in addition to their position and the price, those are the two reasons I'd probably go for one of the forwards. Take your pick. If you have the money, I guess King, since he's on pens, but it's easier.
Well, we think he's on pens, right?
Like, we think he's
on pens before. Yeah,
exactly.
But I can't imagine Saar is still on them. So let's go to the live stream questions. So hi to Mike Halpin as well. He's come in late and he's going to watch back the stream. He's working late today. So the first one's from Hardy Raihan. It says, is Reece James essential this game week? Let me just get off the slide and we'll just put our talking heads on. So we'll spend 5-10 minutes on these questions, guys, and then we're going to get out of here. So get your questions in. I don't have Reece James, so I'll answer it from that perspective. I'm considering whether I really need him this week. It is a great matchup against United on that flank. I know that, as I said before, people like Dread FPL, they're actually captaining Reece James this week. I think it's a very nice option. He is my biggest threat that I don't own, and he is a problem I need to address. I think I have Rudiger as my only Chelsea defender, and I'm getting close to kind of getting those FOMO vibes you're talking about. Every single time he plays, I feel like, especially with Lukaku coming back as well, I think James is only going to get more dangerous to us. And it's a question of when, not if we get him, I think. So for me, I'm prioritizing potentially Jota against Southampton. So I might just wait that one extra week on James, I think. But he has to come eventually.
Yes, he's essential. Get him. This one.
Yeah, just get him. Just get him. Just him. Do the whole shebang. So let's go to the next question on here. So we have thoughts on Salah and Mane double up before both go to AFCON from Nahal. Is it a transfer waiting to happen? Yeah, no, I just can't. I can't do that to myself. Jota at that price, I just can't imagine paying the extra for Mane personally.
I can if you already have him. But now that Jota's an option the way he is now, I don't think you can really justify it. But I think the Salah and Mane double up is fantastic. I think it's great. But you need to plan. You need to plan if you're going that
you
route.
You do. It's just a final one from Hardy about, is it worth taking any hits? If it is too hard to answer him, we need to see a screenshot of the team. Just tweet us after the show and we'll let you know what we think this week.
I would say it's worth it if you are using it, obviously, to fix immediate problems, but also plan for fixture crunch if that can be part of the package. If there's some kind of longer term strategic element to it, I think it makes it more.
I think longer term makes it more digestible for me. And Mike Harper says, should we be patient with Foden? Do we swap for Bilver? I've got Foden and I'm going to double up if I can, but I wouldn't be swapping. It's just not something I would do. Sanka, over the next 5 or 10 game weeks, what do we think the points difference between Kane or Son is? So I don't intend on owning them for 10 game weeks, so I'll go with the 5 game week sample. I personally think like it's going to be pretty similar because of Son's clean sheet points as and when that happens and the extra points for the goal. The 2 million you save could justify any extra points Kane gets on Son. So I think it's a very team structure dependent question. And I think it's just one of those 50-50s where like you just have to go with one of them and hope you're on the right side of the coin.
It could be 5 blanks. It could be 10 points for Kane and like 11 for Son because they got a clean sheet. Who knows?
Yeah, like who knows? So Hodafi. Oh, no, wait. We were sent how to pronounce this in a voice note and now it's been a few weeks and I've already forgotten. So let me try again. Hodafi, I think.
Hodafi.
I hope that's
right. Hodafi.
Yep. Hodafi. Okay, I hope that's right. Do tell us if we're wrong in the live chat, mate. By Jota or Kone? So I think for me, that's just, like they're not Jota. Even in the same bracket. It's Jota no, every day. Ramanathan, if Rafinha is out for at least 2 weeks, who do we get? Money could come through CR7, maybe. I think Rafinha is going to be fine because he was just ill, right? But equally, 2 game weeks is just Saturday and Tuesday. So, like, it isn't that hard to imagine him missing 2 game weeks because it would be like 4 days in real life.
I don't think he'll miss. He missed last week. Rafinha will play. But to answer the question, I go back to the Kone option. I think he's the best budget mid to bring in right now.
I need to think about this carefully because I've been looking at some -4s with my 2 free transfers. And if I get Tony all the way down to like a Davis or a Gelhart, I can then do Rafinha to Jota, I was thinking. But then I don't have enough for Reece James for White. But if I went for someone like Kone instead of Jota, then I can get James. Kone. So now you've got me thinking a little bit here.
We'll chat.
So they're saying King was the most interesting one for me. So great. Start Rafinha or White this week. I can't bench Rafinha. If I keep him, which I might not, but if I kept him, he is a start. Like I would start him, especially over Ben White, where similar to Cody, I can't see a ceiling beyond 6-7 points for White personally. So we've got Geronimo Selle. This is probably the last question now. Who do you think will play, James Chilwell or both? So obviously tonight there was some questions in the comments saying both of them started in the Champions League. Does that mean we could see the likes of Alonso and Aspi starting? I cannot imagine him starting Alonso against United over his 2 favorite boys. I just think that before when we saw Alonso start in the Champions League, it was because like Chilwell wasn't quite ready. He obviously had like the mental health issues at the start of the season, some knocking confidence from going to the Euros and not playing anything. Sounds like he was struggling, and I think he's actually kind of in the right headspace now. And I just can't see a world where he goes to United and won't play his 2 best fullbacks. I just can't see that.
I think Chilwell's a better matchup against Wan-Bissaka anyway than. I think Alonso, yeah.
Like Chilwell was unlucky not to haul last game, right? Like if you watched it, like you could almost say Chilwell probably looked like he should have got more points than James last week. But I think they'll just alternate. I have neither and it scares the shit out of me, which is Rudiger. But we'll see what happens there. So final question from Neha. This is really it. So Mbeumo to Jota or Bernardo Silva? Brownhill to Kone. What's the better? So I think Brownhill to Kone means he's probably moving to a midfield 5 that he doesn't have now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Mbeumo to Jota or Bilva is like he's sticking in the 1 system. It's tough because if you do Brownhill to Kone and then let's say you're benching like Jimenez or Tony, then you're like creating a benching headache for yourself with good fixtures for 2 other strikers. Even if it's an Antonio you've got and then you're benching him because you bought Kone. That's not something I would want to do to myself. So I would just do Mbeumo to.
Well, Jota I'd assume he'd bench Mbeumo if he went Brownhill to Kone. He would bench Mbeumo. So I think the question is Jota against. Wait, who do they play this week? I've already forgotten. Southampton.
Southampton, at
which is
home,
a decent central matchup, or Kone against Spurs, which is a better matchup. I think that's tough. I would play it. I don't know.
I would be like, I would be all over that Mbeumo to Jota move. I'm willing to do it with Rafinha, who I think is a much more elite asset than Mbeumo. So,
yeah.
And Nehal, like you, I spent many months thinking Mbeumo was spelt with UE, but it's actually spelt with EU. So with both Mariner and Hibbo not here today, I'll be the pedantic one and I'll let them tell me off for calling them both that. So with that gone, then let's remove that. So thank you everyone for tuning in. It's been really good fun, Gabe, bar the technical glitches at the beginning and here and thereabouts. I don't know if there's anything you want to say before I wrap up for the callers who are listening still.
No, thanks again. Thanks for everyone in the chat. Really, really, really good chat. We didn't sink the ship, Nima. It sprouted some holes, but it didn't sink. We got to the end.
Just
so well done. Well done hosting. This is a pleasure as always, my friend.
Yeah, no, I had a great time and it was really nice to get involved in some of the matchup content that obviously I'm not part of that show as often. So I think just to let the haulers know, just a bit of housekeeping, between now and kind of, I think it's game week 21, 22, when the FA Cup starts, we're actually looking to just do the one show per game week and try to get as many of the four of us as we can on it, so that the feedback we got loud and clear was that essentially you guys like it when all of us are together and the chemistry and the banter and Mariner's evil laugh at my beloved Arsenal every week. But yeah, so we're going to try to do more shows together while we can. We'll revert to the two a week, I think, when there isn't like 2 days between each deadline and there isn't a deadline between 26th and 28th of December. For now, obviously, Mariner's on paternity leave. It's his birthday today. So if you've not wished him happy birthday or not seen the baby pics, do go check that out and send your love to Hibbo as well, who couldn't be here today. He started a new job this week. So really happy for him and really excited for his next chapter. Thanks to everyone who tuned in. Nice to see lots of regulars. If you missed the start of the show, go back and check the Zonals, the FDR, the NetXG and transfer trends. And otherwise, we'll be on Twitter all week. Send any final questions leading up to deadline. And we hope you enjoy the kind of one show a week and the Ali G outfit that has finally arrived. I'll leave you with that thought. It is coming, teaser, but we'll wait for Mariner. Yeah. Teaser has begun. So thanks, guys. Thanks for tuning in. I'm just going to play the outro. If you've made it this far and you've still not hit like, please do hit like. We will appreciate that. It really helps us. And if you're listening on podcast and you're on an Apple device, please do leave a 5-star review as well. That will really help us get found. So lovely to see everyone. Have a great evening and enjoy the Champions League and Europa League until Saturday. Bye, guys.